the state of Arizona, the state of Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners will now come to order on December 6th, 2023 at 9:01. Ms. Vanderbeek, may I get a roll call of all board members present, please?
Yes, sir. Ms. Angela Powell?
Present.
Dr. George Camacho?
Present.
Dr. Kevin Lee?
Present.
Mr. Mitchell Turbinson? Dr. Wayne Beck?
Present. There are four board members present, one absence. There is a quorum for today's meeting. My name is Dr. Wayne Bennett. I'm a licensed chiropractor and the board's chair. I'd like to welcome our newly licensed chiropractic licensees to the board meeting. Thank you for attending. I hope you will find this meeting helpful and informative. You are required to attend for full 3 hours, and you will be dismissed by staff at the three-hour mark, both those attending virtually and live. At this time, I'd like to remind everyone to please make sure your cell phone is on silent or turned off. If you're appearing virtually via Zoom, please mute your microphone until your matter is called. For your convenience throughout the meeting, for those of you who are attending live, vending machines are right outside by Boardroom C, and the restrooms are across from the elevators. People attending by Zoom are accountable for snacks on their own. This is an open meeting, and it is also being recorded. The audio for the meeting will be posted on the board's website. Please be sure, if you are speaking on the record, to state your full name, speak slowly and clearly into the microphone, and in order to protect the complainant's privacy, please refer to the complainant or patient during the meeting by initials only. We'll now go to our first agenda item, the consent agenda. Items listed on the consent agenda are item D, tabs numbers 1 through 4. Items on the consent agenda appear with a recommendation from board staff. Board members have reviewed all of the materials and recommendations. We are prepared to vote on each matter as they appear on the agenda. Before doing so, I will call each matter to see if anyone here wishes to pull the matter. Pulling the matter means that you are a party to the matter and do not agree with the recommendations, and you would like up to 5 minutes to address the board. If you do wish to pull a matter, please raise your hand when it is called so that I can note that you are here and wish to be heard. Well, let's move forward to tab number 1, consent agenda, tab D1, tab 1, recommended to open a complaint for Dr. Leslie Figa. Does anyone here wish to speak with regard to the matter of Leslie Figa, or if you are attending via Zoom?
I am here.
Dr. Figa, you are present?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for being here. Do you have a desire to address the board regarding this matter?
Yeah, I can answer any questions or hopefully resolve this so it doesn't go any further. So that's why I'm here to participate and answer any questions and see if I can clear all this up.
Okay.
Just let me know how to begin.
Okay. And I think we should begin at this point by getting for the record, a board brief on the matter.
Do you want to go through the rest of the consent agenda to see if we're pulling any other ones before we start with this matter, perhaps?
Well, just by
I would say if you wanted to go through these other three items, if they're not being pulled, we could do 5 minutes for Dr. Figa. And then address the rest of the consent agenda, or we could do each individually.
I think that I would prefer to do, and I'm open to board suggestions, but I think it's more clear and straightforward if we do them one at a time.
Okay.
That way, when we get to the end, we'll have a clear-cut idea of anything that needs to be pulled or deliberated further. So with that in mind, Dr. Figa, you have 5 minutes to make any statement you care to make.
Okay. This event happened, let me pull the date. I apologize, I got a bunch of paperwork in front of me. April 24th, 2022, I received a text from a patient of mine. I don't know if I'm going to give her name or anything. Let me know if I need to. That was a Sunday afternoon. This was a patient of mine for a previous 4 or 5 years, family friend. We traded services as well. Every treatments were done at my office. Nothing was done outside of the office, but everything was done as normal as I treated any patient. On the 24th of April, I received a text from her stating she had severe pain in her upper neck. I haven't seen her for a few months prior to this. The date before that was maybe a month and a half earlier. Up to that point, there were no issues. This was a family friend, as I said. She texted me, letting me know she needed an appointment, and she was in this pain. I believe we were out of town, so I could not see her then. Otherwise, I probably would have met her at the office. So we set up an appointment for the next day, which was actually 2 days later, on the 26th of April, 2022. She came into the office complaining of the same pain in her neck. She did send me a text with some pictures and information of where her pain was when she began suffering from it. Come to find out, her boyfriend at the time had used a heavy-duty Theragun throughout her neck, suboccipitals, anteriors. I mean, obviously, these weren't medical people, medical professionals. They did not know that this area was probably pretty much contraindicated to do what they were doing full force with a Theragun-type instrument around the arteries, around her suboccipitals, all through the SCM, just everywhere to get for relief. She was a hairdresser, does a lot of work, obviously, with her arms raised, so she was having some problems. So he was trying to give her some help. They were very aggressive afterwards, and when they were done, she was just in some severe pain, and this was a different pain that she described from what she normally has, and she's normally a headache sufferer, high stress, a lot going on in her her life, but that's besides the point.
Dr. Figa, may I interrupt, please?
Please.
I'm happy to give you the full time to talk about this, but just as a matter of procedure, there was in fact a settlement this matter, correct?
Yes,
and
sir.
Because of that, it's a matter of protocol that we are obliged as a board to open the complaint. We are not investigating at this point. We are just—it's pretty much
all we have is the malpractice.
Yeah, all we have is a notification of malpractice, and because of that, we are obliged to look into it.
Okay,
and at some point, I think it would be productive for you to have the opportunity once we actually open the complaint to move forward with this. But at this point, the only action we're going to do is open the complaint. So I assume you have no objection to that. And
I had to explain everything. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, you don't. Not at this point. And that's what let's save that for another time so that you don't have to go through this a couple of times.
Sounds good.
Are you fine with that?
I am.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Based upon that, I would entertain a motion to open a complaint relative to tab number one.
Is there any factor that the case has been closed and settled and there was no fault given towards me? Does that matter?
That'll all come up. We're not here to go any further than needs to be done procedurally.
Gotcha.
But this is due diligence on our part.
Right. That's why I wanted to be a part of whatever I need to do.
And I respect and appreciate that very much. Thank you, Dr. Figa. Is there a motion?
I'll make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
And what was that motion?
To open a complaint. Yeah. Thank you.
Right.
Open a complaint.
And we got a second. All right. Is there further discussion in this matter? Hearing none. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All right. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Figa. We'll be dealing with this another day, and you'll be given a full opportunity to move through with it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next on the consent agenda item is item D2, tab number 2, recommending you issuing a non-disciplinary advisory letter or a non-disciplinary order to Dr. Michael DeMarco. Does anyone care to make a comment on that or raise their hand relative to this? Hearing none, I have a motion to issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter or a non-disciplinary order.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll make a motion to open the I'm just babbling this morning. motion to open a we have a consent agreement in place?
No, this would be to take staff's recommendation and issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter and a non-disciplinary order. Is that your motion?
That is my motion.
Yeah. Is there a second?
I would second that.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Ayes have it. Thank you. We're going through a new consent agreement protocol here. We may revert back to our old one after this. Agenda item D3, tab number 3, recommended using a non-disciplinary order to Dr. Andrew Anthony. Does anyone wish to address the board relative to this?
Yes.
All right, please come forward. And which of you is Dr. Anthony?
Hi.
Okay, Dr. Anthony, for the record, please identify yourself.
My name is Dr. Andrew Anthony. I'm a licensed chiropractor and a licensed family nurse practitioner.
Thank you and welcome.
Thank you.
And you, sir?
Jay Rademacher, counsel.
Mr. Rademacher, welcome and thank you.
Thank you.
You have 5 minutes, Doctor. I assume you or your attorney could make a statement relative to this?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The allegations in this case are literally coming from a Facebook landing page, which is no different than a billboard for a hospital chiropractic joint. This was an individual who went online looking for treatment. He then was directed to and found a Facebook landing page, which is essentially a online billboard. Nothing different than that. And from there, if you go to the website that my client has, you would then find all the information, such as his credentials, the services that are offered, both medical and chiropractic, because my client is both a chiropractor and a nurse practitioner. That's what this is about. Is the complainant is upset that the landing page, which is your billboard, did not have the necessary information. So had he gone to the actual web page, he would have found all the information that is required. My client does take this matter serious, despite a full defense to this application, because it is simply no different than, as I said, a billboard out there for advertisement. And had this individual done any internet searching and gone to the actual website, he would have found all the necessary information. His second complaint is that when he called the clinic, he talked to a receptionist who could not diagnose what his issues were and tell him what treatment he needed. It's not her job. She's there to schedule things. I mean, that would be completely inappropriate to have her do anything that he's complaining about. We've asked for a non-disciplinary letter. I think based on what my client has provided this board, because we do take it serious, that he did take, I believe, 4 hours of CE. He has fired the marketing team to make sure that everything is legitimate and has got a new marketing team in place. At this point, we just ask for a simple dismissal. If dismissal is not a possibility, we just think a non-disciplinary letter is at most what this board should do. Anything above that would almost be draconian when it comes to what is going on in this case. My client is here. If there is any specific questions, we'll be happy to answer them. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Anthony, you have about 2.5 minutes remaining of the 5. Do you care to say anything?
Just in my office, too. It's just not me providing services. I do have another. My medical director is another family nurse practitioner that offers us. So when we're in front of potential patients, I'm not the only one doing a consultation either. So we didn't list those on the landing page, but that's on my website.
All the board members have read not only the materials relative to this matter, but also the additional materials that were provided, and we do commend you for the extra effort that you've done with regard to enhancing your diligence with regard to marketing. That's really the behavior. All of what you said I have no issue with. There were some somewhat disturbing issues that hopefully will be addressed within normal statutory language. If there are behavior that we're concerned about, and would be more concerned if they were to occur in the future, we would be taking greater action. But at this point, the staff has made recommendation of a non-disciplinary advisory order, and that's a letter, and that, as it says, it's non-disciplinary. You've said that you're comfortable with that. Yes.
It is a non-disciplinary advisory letter and then the non-disciplinary order for continuing education. So it would be two items. Oh, was it the non-disciplinary? I'm sorry. I apologize. I thought, never mind. It's the non-disciplinary order.
Yeah.
The non-disciplinary.
Yeah, it was originally continuing education, but then we got the information that the education had already proactively been done, which we feel like should be rewarded. So,
circumstance changes the status from two.
Not yet. Okay. I don't think so. And I really would like to be able to move on with the consent agenda so we don't have to bring it back another day, because if we pulled it from this, it would have to be brought back
another
day.
Well, if he's already taken it, you could say, and we could amend the order to accept the courses that he's taken as part of the order.
What does the order currently say?
I have a follow-up. It's to update the website, continuing education for 15 hours for the PBI course, Medical Ethics and Professionalism, and then to take and complete the jurisprudence exam. Which you can amend it to say update website, and then you want the jurisprudence examination, you also have that. So you can change the continuing education to issue it, but then accept the courses you already took.
Board?
I just have one quick question. You did update the website.
It was always update. It was the landing page,
okay.
Dr. Camacho. So it was separate. Like, you know, like if you click on this on Facebook, here's a landing page to sign up for a consultation. That company that did that landing page is fired. So that's not even active. All my credentials are on my website, on my.
So that's already done.
That was done before that. So if the gentleman actually went to our website, it had all my credentials.
Okay. Have you had the opportunity to review the proposed non-disciplinary advisory letter from the board staff?
No.
Non-disciplinary order.
Non-disciplinary. Mm-hmm. Okay. Order. Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a confusion. I thought this was just an advisory letter, not an order.
Yes, this is an order. So it would be an order for update the website within 30 days, which he's already complied with. Continuing education within 90 days. We recommended the medical ethics and professionalism for a total of 15 hours, which I believe, based on what he provided, would meet that requirement, plus take the jurisprudence exam, which would end get an 85 or better.
Okay, so based upon the assumption that the hours that you submitted would meet that requirement, would you, any objection to, I'm trying to get this matter settled today, any objection to taking and passing the jurisprudence exam as additional part of the order?
How long do I have to do that?
90 days.
I mean, my client's willing to do that to resolve this, but I think based on what you've heard, I don't think we need to do anything more. I mean,
but to Brian's on your website right now. And
the landing page still has scheduled accommodation for just $49, but it doesn't state exactly what.
That shouldn't be active.
It's active.
Because
yeah.
I don't even have that company. I sent the board the letter saying we fired that company.
So
I don't even know how.
It's still active.
So if you take that down, then that would be...
I don't know how to do that.
You can't. Yeah, I mean, that's a different service.
It's like, it's a landing page for that. If you look on my, I think my attorney sent a letter to the board saying I fired that company.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know that it was active. I don't even, like, there's nothing that points to that landing page.
And yet, there it is. It would seem that there would have to be a way to take it down.
It's responsible to do that. So if he's notified the company and they still haven't done it,
it doesn't matter. And if you want to continue this discussion, we can re-agendize it and bring it back.
Yeah. It sounds like we're getting into the weeds of the details of this, which is what we're trying to avoid. if you have concerns about it and are not comfortable with the recommendations of the board staff, yes.
Go ahead and finish.
Then what we will have to do, we're happy to do it if that's your wish, and in order to do that, we have to re-agendize that and put it on the agenda for another board meeting.
What are the recommendations? As I said, like we weren't provided the order.
Okay, well, they were just read. Yes. Go ahead and read them again, please.
So it would be to update the website within 30 days from the effective date of the order. And we provided the website addresses and that they can send satisfactory proof to the board to the investigations inbox. Continuing education within 90 days from the effective date, 15 hours of continuing education told. We recommended the PBI medical ethics and professionalism, but based on what he has already taken, it's of course very similar to that, so that would meet that requirement. And then the jurisprudence exam within 90 days, he would need to take and pass with an 85 or better, and he would have one opportunity to retake the examination.
And with that, I would make the comment, because I have reviewed the material as the rest of the board, there were other concerns relative to marketing. That was not the only concern. And so I just want you to understand that it wasn't just that landing page $49 consultation.
So if I understand it correct, the website and landing page are two separate things. So the board would like him to contact the company or whoever is facilitating the landing page, have that taken down within 90 days,
Yes. And
then the PBI would have been satisfied by what he has already done.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
He would then need an additional 15 hours of CE. Or
what he submitted would satisfy the 15 hours.
Okay. So moving forward, all you need to do is take down the page and do the jurisprudence exam within 90 days. Those are the only two things.
That is correct.
That's fine to move this matter and resolve it.
Thank you for working with us on expediting this. And with that in mind, I would entertain a motion to accept the staff's recommendations relative to tab 2.
I make a motion to accept it, Mr. Chairman, to accept the staff's recommendations for tab 2.
Sorry, that was tab 3.
Tab 3.
Okay. Let's put this to bed. So there's a motion to accept the staff's recommendations. It's been seconded by Dr. Camacho. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Thank you very much. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you.
Appreciate your cooperation here. And we hope not to ever see you again.
I don't want to be
likewise.
Don't take it personally. Please don't take it personally. All right. Agenda item D4, tab number 4, recommended terminating probation from Dr. Doty. Is there anyone which would like to raise their hand and address the board?
I'm counsel, but I don't need to make a statement unless there are any questions. We believe the termination of probation.
Thank you, Ms. Carvis. Anyone else care to be heard? Seeing no hands, hearing no voices, I would entertain a motion to recommend terminating probation for Dr. Doty.
I make a motion, Mr. Chairman, to terminate probation for Dr. Doty.
Do I have a second? Dr. Camacho has made a second. Is there just further discussion? If none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by the same sign. Okay, the ayes have it. Thank you. And that completes our rather lengthy consent agenda.
Hey, it's like a monthly kind of week.
Yes, exactly. All right, moving on to tab number 5. This is the time set for the board's consideration of Dr. Wesley Michael Bowman's request for review and rehearing of the board's order issued in case numbers 2020-17, 2021-17, 2021-022, and 2021-028. Dr. Bowman, please come forward if you are present.
I believe he's present on the phone.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, Dr. Bowman. Please introduce yourself.
Dr. Wesley Bowman.
Thank you. And Ms. Carvis for the record.
Yes. Good morning, Dr. Bennett. Members of the board, Attorney Mandy Carvis of Wickersmith, appearing on behalf of Dr. Bowman.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Wayne Bennett, chair of the board. The other board members and board staff will now introduce themselves, starting to the far right, my far right.
Brian Dominick, senior board investigator.
Alyssa Vanderveen, executive director.
Kate Yosin, assistant attorney general.
Angela Pell, Vice Chair.
Dr. Kevin Lees, Professional Member.
Dr. George Camacho, Professional Member.
Diane Jadilla, Assistant Attorney General, serving as the Board's Independent Legal Advisor on this matter.
Thank you. Mr. Mitchell Turbinson is not present today. We do, however, have a quorum relative to doing business. Under the board's rule regarding review or rehearing, Arizona Administrative Code R7-305A, the board may grant a review or rehearing of a board decision for any of the following seven causes materially affecting your rights. One, irregularity in the administrative proceedings of the board or any order or abuse of discretion that deprives the professional of a fair hearing. Two, misconduct of the board. Three, accident or surprise that could not have been prevented by ordinary prudence. Four, newly discovered material evidence that could not with reasonable diligence have been discovered and produced at the original hearing. Five, excessive or insufficient penalties. Six, error in the admission or rejection of evidence or other errors of law occurring at the administrative hearing. Or seven, the decision is not justified by the evidence or is contrary to law. If the board grants the request, it will specify the grounds on which the review or rehearing is granted, and the review or rehearing shall cover only those matters so specified. For example, if the board granted review on the grounds of excessive penalty, the board would then review the penalty to determine whether it is in fact excessive. After reviewing the penalty, the board would vote to either affirm the penalty as previously ordered or modify the previous penalty. If the board denies review or rehearing, the proceeding is concluded. This proceeding is being transcribed by a court reporter.
She's on virtually.
Okay, that's a first. Welcome, court reporter. Hello. Everyone must speak loudly and clearly. Only one person may speak at a time. Dr. Bowman, we have read your request for a review or rehearing. You have 10 minutes for an argument. Please specifically state which of the seven grounds you are relying upon and why. And your time, doctor, begins now.
Good morning, Dr. Bennett. I'll be addressing the board today with respect to the motion for rehearing and the basis that contained therein. We have cited three separate bases for rehearing in this matter. One, excessive penalties, because the board voted to revoke Dr. Bowman's license. Two, an error in the admission or rejection of evidence, which I will specifically address. And three, the decision is not justified by the evidence, and those are all pursuant to, R4, 7, 305, C5, C6, and C7. As this board is aware, there were several pending complaints against Dr. Bowman. All four case numbers are listed within this motion for rehearing, 2020-017, 2021-017, 2021-022, and 2021-028. All of those stemmed from allegations that were several decades old. There was also a companion criminal case that was ongoing out of county. There were several issues with the criminal prosecution in terms of multiple returns to the grand jury, several different rounds of grand jury proceedings, obviously numerous allegations, all of which were, again, decades old, so old that in many instances, Dr. Bowman could not even find or did not even have any records for these patients to be able to respond to the specific allegations as to when these acts allegedly occurred beyond denying the conduct. Ultimately, after many years of pending criminal charges against him with no relief in sight in that regard, and also the risk of taking the matters to trial with numerous charges against him, Dr. Bowman was ultimately able to enter into a plea agreement at advice of criminal counsel. Those pleas were for non-designated felonies to address the old charges. the non-designated felonies were to be treated as misdemeanors and pursuant to the rules of evidence should not be used against him in other proceedings because it was a plea of no contest, not a guilty plea. Dr. Bowman had been on probation for many years pending the outcome of his criminal matters, including all of those board cases. Throughout that entire time when he was on probation, he had things in place to have a female chaperone present when he saw female patients. He is, was, for nearly 40 years, a chiropractor in a community that has very little access to healthcare. When the hearing was held, he had numerous patients show up and appear before this board, asking for this board to allow him to continue to practice and serve the community that he has served for 40 years. We understand the serious nature of the allegations, but we do not believe that Dr. Bowman's decision to enter into a no-contest plea to resolve the pending criminal matters, to finally put the stress of that behind him, the cost associated with many years of a criminal defense, and finally be able to move on with his life without that hanging over his head. Dr. Bowman had served that community for nearly 40 years. He still has hundreds, if not thousands, of patients that want him to continue to be able to serve that community. We believe that the proper action here would be to allow Dr. Bowman to continue to practice for the remainder of his decided practice life, which if he were allowed to practice would probably only be another year or so because, again, he's practiced for nearly 40 years and he would like to have the opportunity to complete his service for that community and allow someone else to overtake his practice. He would be willing to abide by the board requirements that have been in place while he was on probation to continue to have a female present when he was treating female patients and remain on probation and under the supervision of this board for the remainder of his time. If nothing else, Dr. Bowman would like the opportunity to have his license reinstated and to retire on his own accord rather than to have 40 years of practice end with a revocation. Again, for very serious but very remote allegations against him, which rose to the level of he said, she said. We believe the decision to revoke his license was an excessive penalty. We also believe that there was an error in admission or rejection of evidence because evidence that was admitted before this board did not accurately reflect the information that was presented in the criminal case. There were things presented from indictments that had been taken back and redone. There was also evidence that was in police reports that ultimately did not become part of the plea agreement. For all of those reasons, we believe that the decision was also not justified by the evidence. And upon that basis, we would ask that this board grant a rehearing and or reinstate Dr. Bowman's license and allow him to practice under probation for the remainder of his career and or reinstate his license and allow him the opportunity to retire and end his career in an honorable way rather than to end his career with a revocation. We appreciate the opportunity to be heard by this board, and we appreciate the time and consideration for this very serious matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tarvis. Dr. Bowman, you have about 4 minutes of your time remaining. Do you care to make any comment in addition to Ms. Tarvis?
No, I think Ms. Tarvis said it all.
Okay, thank you. I believe next we will hear from the state's attorney. Thank you, Ms. Carvis. Please come forward and identify yourself for the record, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Roberto Pulver, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Arizona in this matter.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Pulver, you have 10 minutes for a response or argument.
Let me just get some materials out here. Before I begin, before we begin, just one brief procedural item. I did hand to Ms. Carvis a case that I'd like the board to take administrative notice. And what that would mean is that it's something that is a matter of fact that the board can agree on is true. Something to the effect of, this is a very simple analogy, but the sun rises from the east and sets at the west. So there'd be administrative notice of that. And what I'm asking is, there's a particular case from the Arizona Court of Appeals, I asked this board to take administrative notice. And that case is Holcomb, and I'll spell the case, H-O-L-C-O-M-B versus the Arizona Department of Real Estate. And it's volume 247, ARIZ, period, 439. That's where it begins in the reporter, and it's 2019. I do have a copy for everybody. Like I said, I gave one to Ms. Carvis, so she'd have one. May I pass this out? Please do. One for everybody there. And one for your independent counsel,
right,
Mr. Chairman. I have one. I do have an extra one.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm ready to begin.
Thank you. Please do.
First of all, thank you for allowing me to be here on behalf of the state. As you'll notice that normally in motions for rehearing, there is a memorandum of points of authorities provided to the board. What you are provided by Dr. Bowman were three conclusions. The three conclusions were excessive penalty, error in the admission or rejection of evidence, and decision not justified by the evidence. A memorandum of point of authority would explain the reasons why, and that would allow the state of Arizona to give a response. None was provided, therefore, the only thing that we could do is come here, meaning the state of Arizona, and give an argument before you. So with that said, let's begin with the very first one, the excessive penalty. And I will say the excessive penalty is defeated by the case of Holcomb versus Arizona Department of Real Estate. And not only that, but that case also defeats the error in the admission or rejection of evidence, and also decision is not justified by the evidence. So let me begin by having you look at the very last page of this. And if you look at the very last page, it's page, it's the very last page, it's page 9, but I'm looking at paragraph 26. There's a little paragraph symbol, and it begins, our Supreme Court, and if everyone's there, and it's last page, paragraph 26. And I just want to make sure people are nodding their heads like they're there. Okay. Let me go down and let me say we'll see paragraph 26. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And the line begins with instead. It said, and I'm going to read this out for the record. Instead, in determining whether an administrative agency has imposed an arbitrary or disproportionate penalty, and this is the court speaking, Court of Appeals, we review the record to determine whether there has been unreasoning action without consideration in disregard for facts and circumstance. Simply put, we must affirm the agency's decision if there is substantial evidence to support thereof, and the action taken by the agency is within the range of permissible agency dispositions authorized by the governing statute. The commissioner, they're talking about the Department of Real Estate, therefore has broad discretion imposing a penalty so long as the penalty is within the range provided by the statute. Now, let me go to the next paragraph, and then I'll apply the facts to this. It goes here, and then it gives the statute for the Department of Real Estate, gives the commissioner authority to suspend or revoke a license, issue a letter of concern to a licensee, or deny the renewal or the right of renewal to licensee. Then I'm going to skip down two lines, one more down. It says, as discussed above, the commissioner reasonably concluded that the licensee violated A-17 and A-18 and that Holcomb violated A-21. Each of these violations independently warrant revocation under the statute. And when considered together, we, meaning the Court of Appeals, cannot say the commissioner's revocation of Holcomb and Four Peaks licenses was excessive or an abuse of discretion. So what this case is holding is really three principles here. The first one is the administrative agency, or this body here, has the board substantial evidence to support its decision. Two, has the board reasonably deliberated over its disciplinary action? Three, has the board the authority to impose the discipline when disciplinary action is reasonable and is authorized by the statute? So here's the substantial evidence we have about Dr. Bowman. We had his criminal defense attorney here before us, Mr. Coolidge, testifying to this board that Dr. Bowman pled no contest to seven aggravated assaults that were perpetrated on seven of his female patients. And how do we know this? If you look at the transcript before you, it's pages 95 to 97, and then page 98, lines 25, then you go to page 99 through lines 1 through 12, and I have it before me. So let me just turn very briefly, and I'll get to that. So I'm talking about page 95 and 97. And in there, I'm asking a series of questions of Mr. Coolidge, who is the criminal defense attorney. So here's my question I asked him, and I'll be brief. And here's the question. And that, if you look at, let's look at exhibit N, please. And I'm looking at paragraph 12, where you testify, that's an accurate representation as you testified to what has been pled to, meaning Dr. Bowman. And is it correct to say conviction of aggravated assault? Answer. A no contest plea results in a conviction. Yes. So a no contest plea is a conviction. So, question. Then for 12A, the first instance of aggravated assault that he, meaning Dr. Bowman, was convicted of was between, and I will use the later date, was between actually May 1, 1985 to May 31, 1985. Would that be a correct statement? Answer, yes, by the defense attorney. Then I go through on page 96, what about 12B? What about 12C? What about 12D? And as I go through each one of these, every one of these, we go through all these of the 12s, and the 12s are, if you have your materials before you, if you look at the complaint or exhibit N, whichever you have, let me pull it out here. Exhibit N, all of exhibit, hold on a second here. And I assume my time is going by quickly.
1 minute.
Okay, I'll be very brief here. All exhibit 12, all of them were pled as being convictions. Following that, I asked, again, I can put you to a transcript. What about exhibit M, 13 through 19? The attorney said that was incorrect. What did this board do? The board, in its final conclusions of fact, dismissed all 13, meaning 13 through 19, dismissed them all. Then the board has authority under its statute. If you look at it, it says if you commit even one violation of the statutes, what is the range of penalties that are before the board? It could be an advisory letter. It could be a letter of censure, a letter of reprimand. And I think the board here has only a letter of censure, if I'm correct, or reprimand. Or if you have a formal hearing, you can have suspension or revocation. In this, we found seven aggravated assaults. The board found information that shouldn't have been and threw it out. And then the board said, And they deliberated because in the midst of this deliberation, you may remember, so if you were here, you said, let's throw this out. The evidence is not supported. And you decided to uphold the summary suspension and revoke his license. What Dr. Bennett wants you to do is retry the criminal case, look into the motives of the criminal case. Dr. Bowman. Retry the criminal case. Find out what the motives are of why I did that. That's not the issue here. And lastly, he's going to be a service to the community. Nowhere in any of the statutes does it says that we look to the community in the sense of what they want. It's what they do as standards by the statutes. And with that said, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make a motion to move into executive session for legal advice.
It's been moved to move into executive session for legal advice. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been seconded by Dr. Lees. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. We will move into executive session. The time is 9:48. We will move into executive session and we'll be back when we have finished our legal information briefing. It is 10:04. We will return to normal formal session here and continue our deliberations with regard to whether to grant or deny Dr. Wesley Bowman's request for rehearing. The question is whether to grant or deny the request. Is there a motion to that effect?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I make the motion that we not grant a rehearing. I don't think the penalties were excessive. I don't believe there was any error or rejection of evidence, and the decision is totally justified in accordance with statute.
So your motion is that we deny Dr. Bowman's request for review or rehearing?
That is correct.
Okay, based upon the rationale that you gave?
Yes.
Is there a second?
I'd like a second.
Okay, yes.
And if I may, Dr. Bennett, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes, thank you. I was about to do that. So this does deserve or warrant a roll call vote. So Ms. Andrew Dean, would we please have one else?
Ms. Angela Powell?
Yes.
Dr. Lee?
Yes.
Dr. Camacho?
Yes.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
We have four ayes. The motion passes.
Thank you. Dr. Bowman, board has voted to deny your request for review or rehearing. You will receive an order in the mail within 2 or 3 weeks. Your time to appeal to the Superior Court does not begin to run until the order is mailed to you. If you have any questions, please call the Board's Executive Director, Alyssa Vanderveen, at the Board's office on another day. Board's phone number can be found on the Board's website, chiroboard.az.gov. This concludes our proceeding. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Parks. Moving on now to agenda item tab 4, recommended termination. Oh, we've already done that. I'm moving backwards, not forwards. Okay. Next on the agenda, thank you, Ben. Next on the agenda is item F, tab number 8, the initial action of case number 2023-005, Dr. Richard Brimhall. Yes,
this is a procedural question. Can you please read the court reporter?
Ms. Court Reporter, your services are no longer required. Thank you for your attendance, and you are formally dismissed.
Thank you.
Dr. Brimhall, are you present today?
Present.
Please come forward, sir.
I'm Richard Brimhall, chiropractor. Thank you, board members, for meeting with me today.
Thank you and welcome. Are you represented by legal counsel, doctor?
No, sir.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I had a relationship with his father in a consulting capacity some 15 years ago or so. I just wanted to make it known to the public. You and I have never worked together.
Okay. I'm curious, but I don't. He's a construction background. I don't know. There's several. Anyway,
Your point is that you do not feel like you have any conflict of interest.
No conflict of interest.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Ms. Vanderveen, can I get a board brief relative to this case, please?
Yes, sir. The investigative facts and allegations are, one, improper and unnecessary treatment. Fact two, inadequate history or examination.
Thank you. Dr. Brimhall, the board members have read your response to the complaint. You now have 5 minutes to make an opening statement if you would like to make one.
I'll keep it quick. I mean, I met with the board 9 or 10 years ago for something very similar. I swore I'd never be back. Everything's in the notes. I'd rather do this in person and do whatever you guys need me to do to resolve this and move forward. So.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Is the complainant with the initial CW present? Is the complainant with the initials CW present? Hearing or seeing no response, we will proceed with questioning Dr. Brimhall. Do you have any other information that you would like to provide to the board in addition to what you've already given us?
The treatment was 2.5 years ago. I mean, I don't really remember who she was. We schedule 30-minute exams. I mean, it's pretty straightforward to go through and do a thorough history and exam and treatment. I can't remember. I didn't actually manipulate her neck because her complaint was that I hurt her neck. There was no manual treatment with my hands on her neck. We just had her in a seated position using an arthrostem up her spine, and it was gentle. And when we got to her neck, she kind of winced, and I think it just created a muscle spasm. I saw her a couple of times after that. Assumed everything was fine, but I feel bad that she was injured or hurt, but nothing out of the ordinary. Or I mean, the treatment, everything was really straightforward, and I tried to make sure she was okay and come as many times as you need to. We'll work on the neck, but I know her main complaint was her low back. And so that's why I didn't do any adjusting on the neck other than the arthrostem instrument. So.
All right. So I would like to ask my board members if they have any questions and start with Dr. Lee.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
So I saw that the main complaint was her lower back.
Mm-hmm.
And in her response, she said that she was surprised she was adjusted on her neck. Do you get consent before you do adjustments on all parts of the spine? Do you explain what's going to happen to the patients beforehand?
Usually, yeah. I mean, I explain everything. I'm thorough. I try to check everything head to toe. Her main complaint was low back, so that was my main focus. But yeah, I mean, very, very. I mean, I've been in practice 10 years now, not too long, but long enough to work with a lot of people to know what to explain, what to do, what not to do. But typically, yeah. I mean, I. You know, we're going to sit you up, I want to turn you over, we're going to push down, does this hurt? Yeah.
Do you typically adjust full spine for all your patients?
Not typically. I don't full spine, but mostly. Yes.
That's my only question, thank you.
Dr. Camacho?
Yeah, I'm curious. Did you x-ray this patient?
No x-rays.
Okay. Did you have any records of what you might have had, an MRI in the past or anything like that?
Because
at her age, I imagine it was an ongoing complaint, right?
Her low back, I want to say it was a newer complaint on her low back. She expressed some concern with her neck in the past that she had had a lot of neck pain, which is why I didn't do like what I would consider a normal adjustment on the neck. It was more just trying to correct her posture. But I don't have any other medical records other than her history in my exam.
Did you do a proper evaluation?
Yes.
Did you adjust the low back?
I adjusted the low back.
Mm-hmm. What kind of technique did you use?
That diversified and a little bit of drop table on her. Mm-hmm.
Did she respond in any way after the adjustment?
She acted like she felt pretty good, and I'm not. a practitioner that wants to see somebody 12 or 36 visits. It's kind of an as-needed basis, so I let her know, hey, let's try one visit at a time and schedule next week, and we'll kind of just take it one at a time. So.
But she walked out of the office fine.
She walked out fine.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Powell.
Yeah. Doctor, can you tell us a little bit about the examination that you did?
Most of the examinations are all pretty close to the same range of motion, some palpation. We'll do some orthopedic exams. It's pretty basic stuff that we do on a day-to-day basis.
The patient was alleging that no examination, not even a history, was taken.
I understand her allegations. I'm efficient with my patients. I don't typically announce, hey, we're going to do an exam. It's more, have a seat. We're going to put your head in a certain position, push down. Does this hurt? Turn your head right, turn your head left. Range of motion on low back. Muscle testing. It's push here. Does this hurt? And then we document it.
I was concerned because she's in the healthcare profession herself.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And I should think she would know what an exam is when she says no exam was done, that you would hardly even talk to her or take a history before you were adjusting her. I had concerns.
Sure.
So you're saying you did an exam.
Absolutely. I did.
Thank you. were you aware of her history, past history with regard to seeing other healthcare providers, including a chiropractor, for her problems in the past? When she was 40, I think she said she got two neurosurgeon opinions that she.
She mentioned that, and I think I documented that down, yeah, mm-hmm. Which is why I really didn't focus on her neck during the treatment, but I was aware.
What made you decide to adjust your neck? I'm just.
Well, it was with the quicker arthrostat. What's that habit? I mean, when we're working on posture, if the head is too far forward. So we try to explain posture and how it relates to the hips and everything. And so and typically I'll run that article stand up somebody's back. And
and when you palpate her cervical spine, was there any pain? Did it elicit pain?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
So I felt like the adjustment was warranted for sure. Okay.
She mentioned earlier that you used the activator, which was not suitable for my debilitated cervical spine. Did she explain to you what she meant by saying she has a debilitated cervical spine? Did she ever say
that? I never said debilitating. I don't recall that. But because she also came back a couple times after the treatment, and I explained the reason why we use this is because it's a lot lower force technique.
Right, right.
And
that's what I'm trying to get at. She put down here that it was not suitable for her debilitated cervical spine. Did she ever say that? She don't use that instrument because my neck is debilitated.
That's right.
Okay. I do have a number of questions.
Sure.
How long did you spend during this encounter?
Our patient visits are scheduled. I would say at least 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay. And it seems to be equivocal here. What is the physiological effect of the use of an arthrostem?
For posture correction, we're trying to stimulate the muscles to help that relax, so that way she's not in a lot of pain. Those paraspinal muscles will run all the way down into the lower back. So,
are you saying is it your position that an arthrostem is not an instrument that is used to adjust people with?
I don't use it for that reason. I use it for more trigger point therapy on the arthrostem. But it can just adjust itself.
Okay, so regardless of what you're calling it, if you use an arthrostem, which is an instrument that is used by chiropractors and built for specifically to manipulate the cervical spine,
okay.
But you don't call it that, you say, oh, well, I'm using it in an identical fashion to somebody who's using it to manipulate the spine, it's still manipulating the spine then, isn't it?
Correct. It is correct. I'm nervous.
I understand. It's okay, but we just need to get to the facts.
Okay. Yeah, that is the fact, what you just said.
Okay. So it can't be said that you didn't manipulate her neck.
That's correct. I did manipulate her neck.
Okay. Thank you. And you were aware of her neck issues in the past?
Yes, I was.
Did she specifically tell you, do not adjust my neck?
She did not.
Okay. So when she's in her records says, I specifically said that not to leave my neck alone. That's not why I'm here. I didn't have any neck pain when I came in. I don't want my neck manipulated. All of those things that she said, or I'm paraphrasing her, but she was very clear about it. None of those things were said to you.
She was very clear about it, you know, mostly here for my low back, but, you know, just you're the doc, and we'll see what you find.
You see what I'm saying is that there's such disparity between what you said happened and what she said happened.
Okay.
So I'm trying to find some winnowing apparatus here. And you were aware of the patient's neck pain history, correct?
Yes.
In your treatment record, it says there was an increase in pain in the neck, the thoracic, lumbar, sacroiliac, and hip region, and that her movement was observed to be slow, correct?
Correct.
Did you actually perform a range of motion test on each of those areas that you identified as in your record?
Not using any instrumentation, visual range of motion.
How did you measure her hip range of motion?
But there was no, when she's on her back, we can have her cross her to a figure four.
Did you?
I did, yes, absolutely. We'll do internal external rotation.
Your exam report talks about that you did muscle testing, correct?
Correct.
And in your records, you talk about the AMA Guide to Evaluation and Impairment 2001 edition, which I believe is the fourth edition, correct? It doesn't matter. In there, you say a muscle strength loss of upper and lower extremities indicates a neurological facilitation resulting in dysfunction in the cervical and lumbar spine. And then you say in the same section that you detected a muscle strength loss of 4/5 in four muscle groups bilaterally.
Okay.
Do you recall, or is that you?
Sure.
You,
yeah, that sounds right.
Okay, so how serious of a finding is that to you?
It's serious. Anything neurological or muscle weakness, or any kind of radiating pain down the leg, or radiating pain anywhere, I would say it's serious.
Would you feel it is serious enough that bilateral? You've just been in the record just before saying this. You've quoted the AMA Guides of Impairment Rating, right?
Okay.
And motor loss is a rateable impairment, correct, according to the guidelines that you've just referenced.
Okay.
And then you say the patient has motor loss bilaterally in four muscle groups.
Okay.
To me, that's a very alarming. That's almost like immediate referral. Did that cross your mind? Was part of your clinical decision making?
If she didn't respond to treatment, I usually see how patients do in the first couple of treatments, and if they're not doing very well, then we can refer out or do some physical therapy with their medical doctor.
Okay. I accept your answer. I would think that something that serious would be underlined and noted in the record if you really thought it were true. You mentioned that you had performed some orthopedic tests on the patient. Your record shows that you performed three, only one of which was the cervical compression test. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you say her dysfunction is based upon the examination in conjunction with associated symptomologies and findings. I don't understand what that means. Could you explain that to me?
I only did one. No, that's okay. I did orthopedic exams on the low back as well, but you're just referring to the one on the neck.
I did two on the low back, one on the neck
as well. You can read it to me again, sir.
Yeah, it's confusing. I understand
unless
why you would
I
not.
Wrong or...
It says her dysfunction is based upon the examination in conjunction with the associated symptomology and findings. What dysfunction? And my question is, what are you talking about? What dysfunction are you referring to there?
I guess her history is described with her neck pain or her history, the exam, the range of the palpation on the neck. It makes sense that she's got some palpitations that need to be taken care of.
Okay. So when the word dysfunction is, you're kind of maybe could substitute that with her condition or overall sure. condition. Yeah. You're not referring to some specific dysfunction. Okay.
Okay.
All right. That helped me understand it.
Okay.
Your diagnosis includes two sprains, and one in the thoracic and one in the lumbar spine. What is the definition of a sprain?
An injury within the last 6 weeks.
And had she experienced an injury within the last 6 weeks?
A lower back, I'm pretty sure she has. Yes.
And if you found that motor loss that we had just described as being a pretty significant symptom,
okay.
would you not address that in your diagnosis? And so would that not appear somewhere in your diagnosis?
Usually, I would put it in the diagnosis, first four slots. If I didn't note that in there, then I'll make sure to. But I found that the I need to see what the subluxation or the diagnosis I listed on there.
It was segmental dysfunction and sprain
suspension,
which is kind of cookie cutter, you know, standard
okay.
practice and that Medicare encourages us to do.
Okay.
But what I'm asking you is in the presence of a known identified to the point of quoting the AMA guide,
yes.
motor loss,
okay.
it did not appear anywhere in your diagnosis.
Okay.
Yeah. The content of the subjective session of the patient's second visit on the 6:30 is essentially identical to what you had in first visit. Is that standard practice to just kind of repeat the same stuff?
Yeah, for a little while until we can see if it's making change, great. And if it's not, we're going to have to change something else, something different.
Okay. All right. So, just in my impression here is that you have some deficiencies in your records.
Okay.
And you're seeing a tendency towards, you know, there's a time and place for boilerplate. If the stuff is the same visit by visit,
okay.
that's one thing. But when there are meaningful clinical things happening that are not reflected in the records, that's a whole different matter.
Okay.
And so, based upon that, I have a concern with regard to that.
Okay.
Any other questions from any of the board members? Yes, ma'am.
Yes. Chairman. Doctor, on your health history form, if there's a place for her to note if she's seen anyone in the past for this. She indicates on the history that she had seen a chiropractor a couple of months before she came to see you. Do you know who that was and what that was for?
I do not. Not if it was. It's okay. Right on here.
I will add that to your health history form.
Okay. I will do that. Anything that I can take and improve how I'm doing anything, I will ask to implement. So thank you.
Did she discuss the fact that she lifts weights with you?
She may have. I don't recall.
I didn't see any recommendations for that.
For weightlifting on the exam as well. Okay.
In the history.
Okay.
So in general, kind of the comment would be, because I don't think I made it as specifically as I could. There's a lot of boilerplate about definitions of sarcomeres and quoting guidelines and so on and so forth.
Okay.
But there was a deficit in clinically relevant information.
I understand.
So
I understand. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So any further questions from board members? All right. So my sense here is that this is kind of a he said, she said. She's not here to put forth. In fact, she has communicated that she was wished to withdraw her complaint, which is actually not possible once the complaint is made. But and so the concern that has arisen is one of record keeping. I think that might be our options would be, do we think this moves to some level of disciplinary? If not, then we want to consider a non-disciplinary order. for some remediation of record keeping. So what's your pleasure?
Non-disciplinary order.
Okay.
Non-disciplinary.
Would you like to make that in the form of a motion with and would you like to
we do a non-disciplinary
non-disciplinary order for continuing education in record keeping?
Is there one available?
Yes, there's a particular protocol that we have been recommending. You have a whimsical
so,
look
Dr.
on
Dr. Camacho, would your motion be a non-disciplinary order for continuing education to take the PBI education medical worker keeping MR-17 for 17 hours?
I think that would be good.
Is that your motion?
I'm sorry, that's my motion.
Okay, is there a second?
Okay.
Is there a second? Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. Okay, it has been moved and passed that we're going to give order a non-disciplinary order for some record-keeping remediation.
Sure.
And with that, and with due compliance on your part, we'll consider this matter closed. And I hope that you're pledged to not come back
okay.
Last time comes through this next.
Appreciate it.
Okay. In my handy-dandy schedule here, it says that we have scheduled a break in about 15 minutes, but we can take that break now or we can forge ahead. What's your pleasure?
Okay.
We have a request to take a break, okay. So we will now take a break. It is 10, we'll call it 10:30. We will reconvene in 10 minutes at 10:40. Next on the agenda is item F, tab number 7, initial action in case number 2023-44, Dr. Marjorie Harrison. Dr. Harrison, are you present today? Welcome. Please come forward. And are you represented by legal counsel today?
No.
Okay, thank you. Please settle in here. You would, and identify yourself for the record when you're settled in.
Dr. Marjorie Harrison.
Ms. Vanderveen, may I get a board brief from you, please, in this matter?
Yes, sir. The investigative facts and allegations are fact number one, danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the public. Fact number two, disruptive and abusive behavior in a clinical setting. Fact three, providing substandard care. And fact four, practicing chiropractic without a license.
Thank you. Give me one moment, please. Ms. Harrison, the board members have read your response to the complaint. And we'd like you to take as much as 5 minutes to explain, if you would, or make any comment that you would care to make relative to this matter.
Are you referring to RC?
Yes.
Okay. I adjusted him, and he was very tense, and I just tapped him on the face just because that's the motherly thing I do. And I said, you really need to learn how to relax. And he said I accused him of slapping him so hard it made his face sting. But what he said to you guys was that I slapped him so hard it made his ears ring. If I had slapped him at all, my secretary would have heard it, and there was no, you know, she is here. So I don't know where he's, except that when he went out, he said, she slapped me, so I think I should get a pre-adjustment. So I don't know if that's what he was, why he was complaining about it, because he didn't get a pre-adjustment. I spent a long time on it, because I'm also a massage therapist, so I did a lot of soft tissue work on his neck, trying to get it to release, and I couldn't get it to release, because he just wouldn't relax.
Okay, so you basically categorically deny that you slapped him.
Oh, yes, I did not slap him.
Okay.
That is just not me.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to make us aware of?
According to Peggy, my secretary, when he walked in, he was acting strange, and he was looking up around all around the ceilings, and she said he made her feel uncomfortable. But I was not aware of that until after the fact, after he left. I didn't make a note in the, in my cabinet, so.
Anything else?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, thank you. And RC, are you present? Are you attending here physically, or are you attending via Zoom? Calling out to RC, if you are muted, please unmute and tell us that you're here. Hearing no response, we're going to assume that RC is not present. And so let's begin questioning. And do any board members have any questions for Dr. Harrison? I'll start with Ms. Powell.
Yeah, thank you. Doctor, did you actually retire from practice?
I'm thinking about it, but I have not actually retired.
You haven't, okay. You failed the jurisprudence, correct? And you're allowed to
By a half a point. Yeah.
You're allowed to retake that exam. Have you retaken it?
Not yet, because I was told that I had waited too long and that I needed to start all over. And I've been trying to do this for over a year and getting no response from the board, or a very little response to answer my questions. Nobody seems to get back with me on anything. So,
for several years, you've practiced without a license.
Yeah, I
have. Do you realize that that's a felony?
Yeah. I didn't until recently.
So what did you think? It was okay?
No, but
why didn't you apply?
I did. I applied. I sent all my information in and applied for it and asked what my next move was, and nobody would get back with me. I applied last year for it and sent all my information in and started all over again, and nobody had got back with me. Then finally somebody got back with me, but I'd given up checking my emails because I was getting no response. And then finally, when RC put in his complaint, you informed me that you had replied, and I checked it, and so I followed through with that.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, nobody was getting back with me, and it was like 6 months later after I started all this that I finally got a reply. So it's been a long time that I've been trying to do this.
But it wasn't just 1 year that you had this problem.
But I was not aware of that, because I had done all my classes. I've done all the, but apparently whenever I've been paying, it hasn't gone through, and I was not aware of that. I really was not.
You did the applications online?
I am horrible at computers.
But you thought that your license was approved because you got through the payment portion
application. I was not aware that the payment hadn't gone through.
You know what happens when you pay and your license is renewed?
It's been a while, so I don't, and also when I heard that you don't send out the licenses, I really was not aware.
But there was 1 year when you were, 1 of the years before, each of those years. I'm trying to find what the years were.
2004, 2008, 2016, 2017.
That's a lot of years.
2004.
Yes. Standard.
I'd like to bring to the board's attention the board investigator has pulled up the board's electronic payment portal for credit cards.
Uh-huh.
And the last time that she made a payment for a renewal fee was in 2018, which is the fee that we have recorded in the board's database for her renewal. That is the last time we received anything for a renewal.
Any application either, right? No application.
Right, that was the last renewal and application. So there were no subsequent payments for the years where her license went into.
And the ones previously, right? 2004,
2018 was the first time we started using the license payments, so that would have been the first one. There were no payments in 19, 20, 21, and 22.
What about 2004 and 6?
Eight.
We'd have to go back and pull the check.
Because that was hard copy.
Yeah, we would have to pull her licensure file, but we would have all of that, yeah.
Got it. Okay. That's all my questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Dr. Camacho, any questions?
No.
Dr. Lee?
Just real quick questions, please. Dr. Harrison, after you realized that there was a problem with your license, did you continue to practice?
Yes.
That's my other question.
Thank you. And I'm going to be asking the board staff in a moment to read the language specifically that refers to the mandatory actions relative to practicing on a suspended license. But in the meantime, Dr. Harrison, I will admit to you, I'd go on record as admitting on behalf of the board that as we have been transitioning through a new software system, there have been challenges and there have been delays and it has been a very significant challenge for our staff to deal with that, and we have received we would be inappropriate to not acknowledge that we encounter difficulties and delays. Having said that, I would like to ask the staff to confirm that you do have a record of all calls coming in. Is that correct?
We don't have records of calls coming in. If we had a phone number, we could trace the phone number back. So if she could provide us with a number that she has called us from, I could track that down for you. But in regards to emails, we do track and keep track of all of the emails that is received, and all of that is included in your licensure file, plus any communication that staff has with you regarding your application or your renewal. That is all documented in your licensure.
Okay, and with regard to voicemails, do we keep a log of what those voicemails have come in?
As associated with the licensing file, yes.
And so while we admittedly have been dealing with some issues in this last short period of time, 2023, your allegations in your letter are not consistent with our records in terms of what communication actually was initiated. Yes, ma'am.
I would also like to point out, because she said she received no communication regarding her application. Her application predates CINCIA. So this is on our old system, the paper application. She was mailed a incomplete letter, which included the login information for the jurisprudence exam on February 28th of 22. That is the statutory requirement for us to communicate regarding your license. Those were the items that were not included that made her application complete. She had 60 days to complete those items. One of those items was the jurisprudence exam. She didn't take the jurisprudence exam. We extended it beyond the 60 days to allow her and reminded her she needed to take it. She finally took it and then failed it and subsequently never retook it. That responsibility is on her, not board staff.
Correct. Thank you. And looking further into the facts, as we noted earlier, we see that your license was actually been suspended since 2017, and administrative suspension letters of this kind were also sent to you in 2004, 2008, and 2016.
I don't recall this, 2004 and 8.
I'm sorry that you don't recall them, but we have factual evidence. And based upon these facts, it would appear that you either are not able to keep track of your responsibilities or you don't take them seriously enough to, but regardless of that, you're appearing to be unregulatable here. And so with that and the fact that you have been knowingly practicing without a license, I would like staff to read the language relative to what our mandatory actions are in this matter.
You're looking for the violations?
I'm looking for the
132.927.
I don't have the statute number in front of me, but part where it says shall refer for civil prosecution. I should have written this down when we discussed it.
I know. Just 2 seconds.
While we're waiting, Mr. Chairman, could I ask the doctor what she did with her files if you closed your practice? Do you have a letter that went out to all your patients explaining if it was disclosed and or Did you allow them to pick up the records? Where are the records? What's going on?
I still have the records in my office.
What is your plan?
Huh?
What is your plan for those records?
I'll let the patients come get them. That's what they choose to do, you know, like the ones that are still around.
You do realize you still have a responsibility to maintain those records?
Yes.
Okay. Unless you transfer that to another practitioner.
Correct.
Okay.
We have a sighting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It is 32924J. The board shall report allegations of evidence of criminal wrongdoing to the appropriate criminal justice agency.
So, based upon the word shall, based upon the fact that practicing without a license is a class 6 felony, it is therefore mandatory upon this board that you be referred to the law enforcement with regard to prosecution of this matter. In addition to that, you are practicing without a license, and so in my opinion, it's appropriate that we issue a cease and desist order effective immediately on notice. And so is there any further discussion by board members? If not, I would entertain a motion.
Never mind. Go ahead. Sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I'll make the motion that we issue a cease and desist order and that we turn this matter over to the proper authorities or the criminal justice agency for appropriate action.
Okay. It has been moved that we order a cease and desist and that we refer the matter to the proper agency for law enforcement. Is there a second?
Second.
And seconded, is there further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed by the same sign. Hearing none. Okay, so that's what's going to happen. You are okay. To stop practicing.
Okay.
And we will be referring this matter.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. All right, moving on to tab number 8. The initial action of case number 2023-008, Dr. Chris Smith. Dr. Smith, are you present today?
Sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Dr. Lee. Reflect that Dr. Lee has recused himself in this matter.
The record also reflects that Dr. Lee has recused himself.
Okay, make sure the record shows Dr. Lee has recused himself. Okay. And I assume you are represented by legal counsel today.
Yes, sir.
All right. Please identify yourself for the record.
Chris W. Smith, D.C.
Thank you. And
Bruce Crawford.
Ms. Crawford, welcome.
Nice to meet you. Nice to see you.
All right. Ms. Vanderveen, can I get a board brief from you in this matter?
Yes, sir. The investigative facts and allegations are failure to report another doctor and the danger to the health, safety, and welfare of the public.
Thank you. Dr. Smith, the board has had the opportunity and has board members have read the materials relative to this, and we are familiar with the details of it. We now offer you 5 minutes to make any comment or position statement or anything you care to say relative to this matter.
And
you certainly may have your attorney do that on your behalf.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Bennett. So, again, Bruce Crawford, we were before the board on September 23, 2020, involving the same substantive issue. In that context was whether to open a complaint because there were these hearsay complaints. I provided the board with all of the legal analysis, the specific language of the rule, which this board and or the Arizona legislature adopted. And what it specifically says is that a licensee does not have an obligation to affirmatively provide a written report to the board unless they have personal knowledge of the event. And Dr. Smith did not. We talked with the board about that, and the board voted after hearing the issue substantively not to open it. It appears that that's what we're here again about, which was there were, again, some subsequent complaints, which Dr. Smith did not have any personal knowledge of the events, and he did terminate Dr. Bidlack because he was dealing with what he believed was an older chiropractor who was kind of set in his ways, and although he had not witnessed any, had no personal knowledge of any unprofessional conduct or anything like that, it was just that the joint was not willing to continue to have Dr. Bidlack work there. And Arizona's a termination at will state. You don't have to give someone a reason in Arizona. There doesn't have to be cause. But Dr. Smith had counseled Dr. Bidlack that, you know, in this day and age, you've got to be more communicative with these patients and tell them, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And he just was not able to change his ways. And so Dr. Smith terminated him. But the underlying complaints that patients had, he had no personal knowledge of that at all. And I realize this is a legal argument, and you may not like what the rule says, and I appreciate that. But the rule specifically says it's item 35 of the rule, failing to report in writing to the board any information based upon personal knowledge. That's a specific requirement. The legislator could have said, failure to report in writing to the board any information that a chiropractic physician, blah, blah, blah. But that's not what it says. And it's to avoid requiring chiropractors in the state to have an affirmative obligation to report hearsay incidents. That's not a requirement to any doctor in the state. And again, why is that language there? Which we didn't put there. I mean, it's there for a very specific reason and a rationale, which is that we do not want doctors to be placed in that position. So Dr. Smith did not have any personal knowledge of witnessing any of this stuff. We talked about that with the board 3 years ago. And the board voted after hearing it basically not to open an investigation against Dr. Smith at that time based on the same issue. So, you know, Dr. Smith's here to answer your questions again. But respectfully, we have been here. We have previously dealt with this issue. And in part, he relied upon that decision by the board at that time, that there wasn't this obligation. You know, he's here to answer your questions, and we're not trying to be disrespectful to the board, and I'm not trying to be cute about the language of the rule. The rule is what it says.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And, Doctor, you have a couple more minutes. Anything you care to add to that? Proceed.
Just to reiterate, I didn't witness anything unprofessional that Dr. Bidlack did. And again, I saw that he was an older doctor and wanted to help him because at the joint, our model is that we want to help people to have a better quality of life. And so I did that with all of my doctors because I wanted them to be more professional and have a better quality as a chiropractor to help more people. And so that's what I really worked for, and I tried to do that with Dr. Bidlack, and he wasn't willing to change. And so I released him so that we wouldn't have any complaints and issues anymore further because he didn't want to work with me and follow my guidelines and help them.
Okay, thank you. All right. Board members, let's see, we're not dealing with complaints here, are we? No. Yes, so Mr. please proceed with your questions.
When an accusation is made by a patient against a doctor, do you have policy in place to address how many times the complaint has to arise before you feel any responsibility or categorize it as something that you should report to the board if for no other reason than morals, values, ethics? Not because you have personal knowledge, but you know this doctor's committed this crime 3 times. You're supposed to give him a warning, I understand. You gave him a warning, he still doesn't comply. You terminate him.
Is that the protocol? Do we not have the responsibility to ever mention that to the board?
Okay, so if you're asking, does the joint have a specific written protocol, I don't know the answer to the question. I can let Dr. Smith try to answer that. I think the very next matter is on behalf of the joint itself, so maybe Ms. Carvis could respond to that. But the issue is this, whether it's two complaints or five complaints, the affirmative obligation to report that applies to every chiropractor, not just Dr. Smith, is this. Do you have personal knowledge of these events? Did you witness it? And I provided you with the legal definition of what personal knowledge means. So it's not an issue of how many times. It is an issue of what is required under the law, whether we like that language or not. We can change it if we don't like it. We can go to the legislature and say, we think you need to change that. But that's not what it says.
You're talking about personal knowledge.
Correct.
If you've talked to a doctor, and I'll address you, doctor. If you've spoken to Dr. Bidlack, because you said you were trying to help him, you talked to him to get a correction in his behavior. After you've talked to him several times, and I imagine in some of those discussions, he said, well, yeah, I did this, and thinking it was okay, at what point do you have personal knowledge? Do you not then have personal knowledge?
Well, the complaints in particular, he always vehemently said, no, I didn't do that. And, you know, the way and what he did as far as adjusting is old school and isn't something that we do anymore or any longer without proper consent or advising the patient of what we're going to do. For example, palpating the sacrum to really see the deviation of everything. As old school Dr. Bidlack, he would palpate down the sacrum, and that can lead and go into the gluteal folds of the buttocks. And some people, if you're not explaining what you're going to do, will feel uncomfortable and can feel violated. And so those are the things that I really work with him on to help understand and help him to get the message into health. And that's even why I wrote him up, was because to show him how significant and important that was, that you make sure you're discussing. And for example, as I adjust, I tell you everything I'm doing as I'm about to do it. If it's especially going down into the buttock area, I ask, I'm going to be touching you down here. Is it okay if I do that? Because I want to see blah, blah, blah. And he wasn't doing that. And that was one of my biggest concerns and where I saw that that was what was happening. And that's why I did what I did.
And maybe
to me, that isn't, because he never said he did anything of the sexual nature or unprofessional.
Okay.
That's why.
And so if he had, if he said, yeah, you know, I did that, I don't think there were things wrong, but I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Now do you have personal knowledge?
If he admits to it,
right,
and says yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But that never happened.
That's all my questions.
Dr. Camacho?
No.
Okay. So, yes, we have visited this issue in the past. And, yes, we will be seeking rule change language. But the when we talk about the term personal, what is the definition of personal? Does that mean by visual observation? I mean, the definition in and of itself is ambiguous, and if we wanted to, and we don't need to, I'm just pointing out for the sake of the argument, that personal is not necessarily confined to one sensory pathway, namely that of seeing things. And definition of knowledge is another word that is open to interpretation, because if we have information that upon which we are exposed and upon which we act upon, that can only be considered to be knowledge. And so we have a situation where Dr. Smith, you were the manager, is that correct?
Sir.
Yes, and then it was in that capacity that you dealt with Dr. Bidlack.
Yes, sir.
And so were you aware at that time of any policy relative to the governance within your employer's environment of issues of potential sexual misconduct?
I don't understand your question.
as a manager, it's your job to manage. And organizations typically have protocols that are followed, especially when they're managing risk, like sexual misconduct. Were you aware of any existing policy relative to the appropriate behavior by you as a manager in dealing with those issues?
Yes, and that's what we followed was, and if there was actual knowledge of it, then yes, we would report it and terminate the person.
So it was your interpretation of actual knowledge, as opposed to fictional knowledge. I don't know what that
well,
means.
Well, how I look at it is this way. You can be told something by someone.
Mm-hmm.
Is that actual knowledge? Is that actual truth? Is that actual something that you will go and act upon based on the fact that, for example, I say to you that this stock is a great stock and it's going to soar and going to be high.
Yeah. I appreciate you. I understand your point, and I acknowledge your point.
Thank you.
But when we first visited with you, that's actually the basis upon which this body elected to not proceed. But then more data came to light, and more information that made it clear that you as a manager had access to specific information in that employee's file, personnel file, relative to prior history of these kinds of inappropriate behavior. Is that not the case?
I'm not exactly sure which one you're referencing as being knowledge and further evidence.
Well, there were complaints of sexual misconduct in his personnel file on 11-19-2018 and 2-22-21 prior to the 5-28-2020. Actually, one of them was prior, one of them was after. The point is that you had knowledge of prior inappropriate behavior. So just to make my point, and then I'll let you respond. So it's one thing to have hearsay evidence of an occurrence. The question really is how much hearsay evidence actually then becomes actionable. And the reason why I ask that question is because ultimately, go ahead and respond, and I want to take the next step.
Can I just interject real quick?
Certainly.
Thanks, Dr. Ben. I mean, again, I'm not trying to play a word game with the board. We've provided the board with multiple definitions of what legally it means to have personal knowledge. And it legally means something you actually witness, not something somebody tells you about, which is what we call hearsay in the law. So respectfully, we can again say we would like the rule to be read differently. We wish they hadn't used that language, but that is the language and that is the requirement under your rules relative to this issue. And we have to go by the legal definition of what personal knowledge is.
I understand, sir.
Okay.
I understand.
All right.
But every word has a definition, and an interpretation of those is lacking in clarity. And we've inquired along exactly the same pathway. So I get what you're saying.
Okay.
So the sequence here was we had hearsay evidence. You said it's hearsay evidence. It's not actionable. We had more evidence, and we investigated further. When you terminated Dr. Bidlack, was it an at-will, no-cause termination?
It was.
Pardon me, you terminated his
support. It was for failure to comply and listen and do the things I asked him to do.
Okay. And the so it was not no cause. It was at-will, but you gave specific causes as being not compliant with previous orders that you had given to him.
Correct.
Relative to... So you engaged upon a corrective activity relative to inappropriate sexual behavior, and he failed to comply with that, and you fired him.
Not for inappropriate sexual behavior, because we did not witness any of it, and it was all...
Then what did you witness? What was the...
It was because of the fact that he would not stop not communicating with the patients correctly and lifting the shirts, which were causing patients to be uncomfortable and complain.
Okay, so in your records that we have read, the behavior that is described is lifting skirts and touching areas inappropriately. And so you're saying that,
well,
you didn't believe all that. You just said that he didn't communicate properly.
Okay. When you say touching inappropriately, you can touch somebody, and you know, chiropractors, we're always touching areas that might be deemed inappropriate, correct?
Yes.
So how and what that changes to be inappropriate and appropriate and professional is the communication with the patient, correct?
That's part of it.
Okay. So thereby, when you do explain and communicate with the patient prior to touching areas that are sensitive in areas that we must sometimes touch to be able to truly see and definitively know what we need to do, that is the it's not necessarily a sexual misappropriation. It's just the lack of communication, nor is it unprofessional. It's just the lack of communication and not being. And in today's society, we have to be more doing things like that and communicating better with our patients because of how society is today.
Okay, so then your contention is that you fired Dr. Bidlack because he didn't communicate properly with patients.
Correct.
Okay. Despite the fact that the things that he didn't communicate with had to do with patients who were significantly offended enough by the inappropriateness of the behavior, the perceived inappropriateness of behavior, that they filed specific complaints about it, and this happened on a repeated basis.
Repeated basis, it happened, but over a long period of time of who and what he saw. So it happened, yes.
Okay, I think three occurrences over a three-year period of time is not, that's significant to me. So my question then becomes to you, if you have, and Mr. Crawford pointed out that there is no number, and I agree with that, but at what point then would you say it's my responsibility as an employer to protect the patients that are in my business, my practice, that I'm supervising and responsible for, if I have a repeat offender? And, you know, it's one thing to say, well, the question, I guess, comes down to, in your mind, did you really think, oh, well, he's just not communicating with his patients properly? Or did you really think that there was sexual misconduct because three different patients had said there was sexual misconduct, but you wanted to be able to get off by saying, but I didn't witness it personally, so I'm going to call it lack of communication with the patient?
No, the real issue was that he would say, yeah, I'm doing following and everything, but I was not in the clinic enough to see and follow and really witness it. Mm-hmm. And that was why I finally terminated him, because I did and was in the clinic and signposted it up without asking. And after I pulled him aside and said, did you ask that patient if you could do that? And he said, no. I said, okay, that's it. I'm done.
Okay. And in the normal law enforcement process, if a patient talks to a law enforcement officer and says he did something to me that was inappropriate, that's hearsay evidence, right? I mean, that's the complainant saying something happened to the police officer. Is that acceptable as reliable evidence in standard law enforcement?
I'm not a law enforcement officer, so I can't comment on that.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Good response.
But Dr. Bennett, you know, everybody here knows, in this day and age, employers are terminating employees just based on allegations without any proof. You can take a position whether that's right or wrong, but that is our society now. So now you have the joint and Dr. Smith's position where he has no personal knowledge. He hasn't observed anything he believes is sexual misconduct or anything like that, but he doesn't want to deal with this doctor who's not listening to him on what you need to communicate with patients before you do things in this day and age. He has the absolute right to let that doctor go, and that's what he did. But you know very well, in this day and age, employers are firing people all over the place just based on allegations. So respectfully, that doesn't mean that the individual is guilty. And maybe that's where our society has come. If you are alleged to have done something, you are guilty. But that's not right. That's not what this statute says a doctor's obligation is, whether we like it or not. And again, I encourage you to change the language if you don't like it. But to say that a doctor has an affirmative obligation to report another chiropractor for alleged unprofessional conduct, the requirement is they personally observe it. That's what your rule says, and you can't get around that, respectfully.
Okay. I, again, hear and understand your position.
Okay. Thank you.
The question then becomes, as a manager supervising people where you would never, in a management capacity, never be in a treatment room, never see any of this stuff, does that then completely absolve one of any responsibility relative to acting upon that information? At what threshold, as a manager, does the data, the information arise to the point that it's actionable, and then it becomes actionable? And this is where I have issues with this. When it becomes actionable, do you then say, well, I'm firing you because you didn't wear your tie right, or you didn't communicate with the patient properly, and we talked about this before, when you know darn good and well that there's sexual inappropriate behavior going on, and you don't do it because you know it's going to protect you?
I don't think that you have any evidence that Dr. Smith was aware of inappropriate sexual behavior. He was aware of allegations.
Direct. That's my point exactly. As a manager, he would never be in a treatment room where he could directly, it would be virtually not impossible, but completely improbable that a manager would ever be in a treatment room observing a treatment where they would have direct knowledge of sexually inappropriate behavior.
I understand your point and your concern. Then get the rule changed. Get it to put an affirmative obligation on a chiropractor if they're in a management position that they have some higher duty. But that's not what your rule says. I would encourage, get it changed. That would be fine. At least it would be clear to the chiropractors out there what their obligations are, and if they're in a management position, than what their additional responsibility and duties are. But that's not what is on the books.
All right. We can argue.
Dr. Smith, do you own this clinic or part owner in this clinic?
I am not with that group anymore. I didn't have part anything of it other than
strictly managed.
Trying to help doctors become better doctors. Yes, ma'am. Okay. May I say something, Dr. Smith?
Yeah, certainly.
I can see your point about enclosed treatment rooms. We're in an open bay. There's other doctors not 10 feet away from Dr. Bennett, Bidlack, working. If there was something so inappropriate and sexual misconduct, our doctors look after each other and watch each other and help. And, you know, they would have relayed that to me. And I would have then had, in my opinion, firsthand knowledge. And then I would have reported him. And all that, but that was
I'm sorry, but how by your definition would that be firsthand knowledge?
Because it was witnessed.
But not by you. And so have firsthand knowledge.
But I still wouldn't have firsthand knowledge.
Okay. That's my point.
But it's still, again, it would have been witnessed.
Okay.
And I still wouldn't have had first-hand knowledge.
So I think we're kind of beating a dead horse here. any other questions from any of my board members? Okay. So the staff has recommended a non-disciplinary advisory letter, and it's based upon the language in – may I borrow this thing? Under the the categories of when a non-disciplinary advisory letter is issued, and it's – very early, I always miss this when I'm looking for it because it's so early in the text. Can staff refer me to this language where it discusses behavior that, if repeated,
it's
would be
32900.
1A. Do you have a page?
Page one.
Yeah, page one, as I said. A minor or technical violation, and while the license is, insufficient evidence to support disciplinary action. The board believes that the continuation of the activities that led to the investigation may result in further board action against the licensee. That, to me, is the, well, that's the recommendation from staff, correct? So what is your pleasure as a board? What are your options here?
I would make a motion, Mr. Chairman, that an advisory letter, non-disciplinary advisory letter, pursuant ARS 32-901A, be issued to the licensee, wherein it says there is insufficient evidence to support the disciplinary action. The board believes that the continuation of the activities that led to the investigation may result in further board action against the licensee.
There's a second. Okay. Is there any further discussion? And I will just make by way of discussion, we're dealing with two issues here. One of them is gray language relative to the rule, which will be being addressed. The other issue is the responsibility of a business entity relative to the employees in that business entity. And as we are seeing, as time changes and new corporate structures emerge and practices expand into different healing treatment environments, and healthcare evolves, liability issues associated with ownership have to be more clearly defined. And this is an area that we feel it's important that we look into. And so with that, any other discussion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by the same sign. The ayes have it. Motion is carried. This will be a non-disciplinary advisory letter.
Thank you. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Now we're ready for tab
9.
Thank you, Dr. Lees. Let the record show that Dr. Lees has recused himself on tab number 9. And this is case number 2023-009, the joint Avondale LLC. I know, that, Ms. Carvis, you are not the owner of the joint Avondale LLC, but is the owner of the joint Avondale LLC present today?
Yes. Tony Giuseppe, who is one of the owners, is present via Zoom. He is not located in the state of Arizona.
Okay. Mr. Giuseppe, would you please unmute and identify yourself?
Hello, this is Tony DiGiuseppe. I'm the owner of the co-owner of the joint Avondale LLC.
Thank you for attending, sir.
Thank you.
And Ms. Carvis, do you identify yourself for the record?
Yes, Dr. Bennett, Mandy Carvis of Wicker Smith, appearing with and on behalf of the joint Avondale and its owners, Mr. Tony DiGiuseppe, who is present remotely today.
Thank you. And Mr. DiGiuseppe, I apologize for mispronouncing your name.
You said it perfect.
I thought I left out the D. If not, I take back my fault. But never mind. Ms. Vanderbeek, would you care to give us a briefing on this, please?
The investigative facts and allegations are fact number 1, failure to report another doctor, and fact 2, danger to the health and safety and welfare of the public.
Thank you. Mr. DiGiuseppe, all of our board members have read your response to the complaint, and you have 5 minutes to make an opening statement if you'd like to make one, or if you're legal counsel would like to make one on your behalf.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Bennett. Mr. DiGiuseppe is happy to answer any questions that the board may have. Obviously, this case is essentially a companion case with a matter that this board just heard against Dr. Chris Smith, who was the clinic director at the time of the allegations against Dr. Bidlack and his ultimate termination from that clinic. As counsel for Dr. Smith pointed out, there is a bit of a gray area with respect to the obligations of reporting of such allegations or conduct. As a non-chiropractor owner of a clinic, Mr. DiGiuseppe and his wife obviously retain and employ chiropractors to run those clinics and oversee the clinics. They do so consistent with there are certain policies and procedures that are in place via the joint corporate, and then the franchisees themselves can add additional policies there. They rely on the licensed providers who are there to determine whether or not the providers who work in the clinics are following policies and procedures and also just following general standards of care with respect to the provision of chiropractic care to the patient. As was previously pointed out, all of the joint locations, including the one that Dr. Bidlack worked at, where these allegations of patients, I would say, being made to feel uncomfortable as opposed to an overtly sexual allegation, these all occurred allegedly in open treatment environments. There are no private rooms, so anyone in the clinic could witness anything that was going on at that time. By my understanding, it sounds that that Dr. Bidlack was failing to communicate properly with patients with respect to granting permission for moving clothing or palpating sensitive areas, which obviously he should have been done. Dr. Smith, who was the director of the clinic, determined that it was appropriate to provide him some guidance in that regard. And when there were other complaints with respect to the same or similar issues, ultimately it was decided to terminate his employment. Mr. DiGiuseppe owns several locations and obviously is very interested in making sure that those locations are ran in a manner that is appropriate and consistent with the laws here in the state of Arizona and any other states in which he owns and has providers there. But as a non-licensed professional business owner, he properly relies on those who are licensed within this state. Mr. DiGiuseppe has obviously heard this board's concerns with respect to when providers should or should not report matters to this board. Ultimately, he still has the right and to rely on those individual providers. It sounds as if the board is potentially going to move for some legislative changes or action to take a more affirmative step as either a licensed provider or a business entity owner. The thing that was cited with respect to a potential violation pertains to a licensed provider and whether or not they have an obligation to report another practitioner to this board. So in that regard, we believe that the message has been heard. This board issued a non-disciplinary letter to Dr. Smith. Mr. DiGiuseppe has obviously heard that information as well. He will obviously abide by anything that this board would like him to do as a business entity owner. However, we do not believe that any statutes or regulations require the owner of a business entity or a licensed practitioner to report to this board a mere allegation, even if it is an allegation of a sexual nature, again, with respect to the lack of personal knowledge or foundation. Allegations don't necessarily rise to the level of requiring reporting. But again, Mr. DiGiuseppe is here. He's happy to answer questions or concerns that you may have with respect to policies and procedures within this particular clinic or with any clinics that he owns, and we appreciate the opportunity to be heard. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DiGiuseppe, you have a couple minutes left of your time. Would you like to make any additional comments?
I believe Mandy has done exactly. She has spoken for us perfectly. We feel that it's very important as business owners who are non-DCs to ensure that we do look at what's in the best interest of the public. I myself, I have other licenses because I'm a mortgage loan officer and I'm licensed in many states. We have joints located in Idaho as well as Washington. We treat these clinics with great respect, making sure that the doctors that are overseeing the facilities are making sure that the doctors are being that are treating the patients are doing it with the utmost care and respect to the public. Additionally, we have, after the separation with Dr. Smith as our clinic director, we have hired two clinic directors who oversee all of our clinics on purpose So that way there is more of a collaborative opportunity for them to speak with each other and make a decision on what they should do if they have any kind of situations that come up. So it's not just put on one person. It is, you know, it's better to have, in our opinion, to have more decision by two licensed doctors.
Thank you. I appreciate that, those comments. I'm going to ask board staff momentarily to review the language. Ms. Carvis has raised the issue of how much of the responsibility extend from, boy, aren't you quick. Reading my mind again. All right, go ahead.
The statute I would like to direct you to is 32934F. A business entity must comply with this chapter and board rules.
So we've had dialogue on the interpretation of that, and maybe we could get our AEG's opinion about this. But the question has become, has arisen, and just by way of point of law, how responsible for is a business entity for what goes on inside the practice? And do all of the rules that apply to a practitioner transfer at the same level to a business entity or not?
Excuse me. Yes, the statutes and board rules that govern the practice of chiropractic apply to business entities the same way as they would any other practitioner of chiropractic. Not necessarily, however, to the owner of the business entity, just to the business entity itself.
Okay, so the liability is with the entity. And whatever goes on beyond that is corporate law, right?
Yes, at least with respect to the board's authority, it's with the entity.
Okay, good. All right. So, board members, do you have any questions for Mr. DiGiuseppe or Ms. Carvis?
No questions.
Okay, and so, Mr. DiGiuseppe, are you aware of your responsibilities and liabilities according to the law there as a the principal in a business entity?
As of now, I did not know that, but I was under the impression, or I was under the understanding that anything that had to be reported to the board would have been reported by the doctor who was in charge at the time. Because of the fact that's the reason why we did that, you know, being that we are licensed in the state of Washington as well, and we have clinics there, that is run as a professional corporation, which is why we have doctors to do that. And that is the same exact reason why we did that in Idaho. And that's the reason why we do it in Arizona as well, because we want to have a consistent manner to make sure that things are done accurately and consistently across all of our clinics. So that's the reason why we personally did not know of any other, reporting that we should have done directly to the board.
Okay. And I applaud your proactive management strategy in that regard. I want to be clear though, that you understand that if something inappropriate or a violation of statute occurs within one of your, one of the business entities, or within one of the clinics that is owned by a business entity, that business entity is just as accountable as the doctor is violating in that practice. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am now.
Okay, thank you. And I'm curious about, there's a little communication problem. According to board staff, you responded initially just identifying yourself, but did not respond to the questions that they had, and you didn't really actually respond to that until quite some time later. What happened there?
What the unfortunate part was is the word position was misinterpreted by our HR manager, employee relations manager, Ann Borja. And so she did respond. But then ultimately I did get a call from the chiropractic board office from Lawrence, and he asked me to do that clarification, get that in, which we did. And we did that, return that, right away. We did not get, some of the documentation until later, from the board, because of the, when it came in the mail. And, being that we have a lot of our stuff that goes to a PO box, that was missed. But we did respond. But ultimately, like I said, there was miscommunication on the one, on a terminology. But we did resolve that right away and then obtained counsel at that point.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any other questions from board members? So this is a, essentially, board recommendation is essentially identical to the one prior. I would entertain a motion to make a motion to a very similar effect.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I make the motion to issue an advisory, a non-disciplinary advisory letter pursuant to 32-901A. It is a non-disciplinary letter.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
And is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed by the same sign. You guys have it unanimously. Thank you, Dr. DiGiuseppe. We'll be sending you a letter. Thank you, Ms. Purvis.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's move on to tab number 10.
We have a 10-minute break. I need to confer with Ms. Carvis on another matter.
Okay, we are going to take a 10-minute break. We will convene exactly at 11:54.
We can release the licensees, too.
Licensees, you are emancipated a full 16 minutes early. Break, a short one, but he'll be here momentarily. And we are ready for tab number 10, the application of the licensure from Dr. Chalet, is that how that's pronounced? Gear, Dr. Gear, are you present today?
You got it, yes.
Did I say it properly?
It was close, yeah. It's Chalet.
Okay, well, that'll be good enough. And are you represented by legal counsel today?
No.
Okay, and just for the record, please identify yourself.
Dr. Chalet Gear.
Thank you. And Mr. Dominic. Can we have a board brief relative to this applicant?
She submitted an application for licensure by examination and PMMTP. She answered yes to questions 35, 36, and 37. I won't state those exact questions unless you would like me to.
Go ahead. So, not necessarily.
And they have to do with if you've been arrested or charged with a misdemeanor or felony in the last 12 months. And then she also answered yes to if she had any discipline taken off any license previously, if there's any formal sanction. The license in Colorado, there was a stipulation and final agency order for failing a continuing education audit. Dr. Gear's Colorado license is currently active. And in regards to the misdemeanor felony, it had to do with driving while ability impaired, and the court order has been satisfied no longer on probation with the court.
Thank you. Dr. Gear, the board members have reviewed your application. You have up to 5 minutes to make any statement if you care to make one.
No, thank you for hearing on this. My heart's pounding through my chest. I've been waiting in anticipation for a while.
So what are your plans to practice, Dr. Gear?
So I have a job lined up in Gilbert. It's like right on the border of Mesa and Gilbert. So I signed a contract for that job in September. I currently own my own practice. So I actually went out of business the 17th of November. So that's why you see me sitting here in front of my sign. The rest of my office is all packed up.
Okay, thank you. Board members, any questions?
No questions.
No questions. Board members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I make a move. I would like to move that we grant licensure to the doctor.
Pending payment of?
Pending appropriate, all appropriate fees are paid.
Thank you. And is there a second? I'll give it to Dr. Gleese. He was a microsecond ahead. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed by the same sign. Ayes have it. Welcome aboard, Dr. Gear. You are now licensed. You're now licensed in Arizona.
Thank you.
All right. Next on the agenda is item G, tab number 11, application for licensure, Dr. Tommy Gossett. Dr. Gossett, are you present today? You are muted, Dr. Gossett. I see you waving, but I also see the red microphone. Nope, still muted. While you're addressing the technical issue, Dr. Gossett, can we get a board brief? Oh, wait, are you there now? I see the microphone's gone.
No.
Okay, good. And please identify yourself for the record.
Tommy Keith Gossett.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Dominic, do we have a board brief?
Yes. He applied for licensure by universal recognition. He answered yes to question number 36, which has to do if he's ever been arrested, convicted, pled guilty, or pled nulla contendere to a misdemeanor or felony in any state. He answered yes. It was back in 1999, early 2000, he was arrested and charged with a misdemeanor or felony. And then he also answered yes to question number 33, which asked if he has had any formal sanction taken against his license. He answered yes. He answered yes for having discipline taken twice. There was in Illinois, there was a consent order for improper billing, for double billing a workman's compensation carrier and a major medical health insurance carrier for treatment rendered on the same date of service and relating to the same condition. There was also, he provided the response which you have read, and then the second one was another order back in, this one was 1990, where he was practicing on a suspended license. He had forgotten to renew. And in his response, he had changed practices and forgot to update his mailing address. And then just the other thing that came up during the course of the investigation was there was an NPDB query, the National Practitioner Data Bank. There was a hit for a malpractice settlement in the amount of $15,000. Did provide a response to that upon request.
Thank you. Dr. Goss, the board members have all reviewed your application. You have up to 5 minutes to make any kind of statement you'd like to make at this time.
Okay. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to apply for not Illinois, but Arizona license. And thank you for taking the time to review my past and consider my application. The issue about the license lapse, again, we moved to a different location, a different town, and failed to, this was early on in my practice, failed to let Illinois know, and I received a phone call from the insurance, one of the insurance companies, and they informed me what the situation was. I immediately contacted the Illinois State Board and worked with them to get that corrected and taken care of. And so that was no longer an issue. As far as the insurance issue, I voluntarily took a training course in insurance, which is over a period of a year there at Logan College in St. Louis, and have had no further issues with insurance. As far as the arrest, those turned into, it was a misdemeanor, not a felony. And that was during a very difficult divorce in 1999. Rather than go through a public trial, my and bad press that would result, my attorney recommended that I settle with the matter with a plea. So that's what I did. After that time, over a period of time, then I was remarried, and we the Illinois saw fit to licensed me as, and my wife, as a foster parent. And we had probably 25 children through our homes, our home during those years, about 13 years. And we ended up adopting three as babies or toddlers. And they are now 18, 14, and 10. So I'm looking, now that we live in Arizona, I'm looking to make a living and support my family there. Presently, I'm back in Champaign, Illinois. I have two practices here that I'm running at this time to make ends meet, and looking forward to the possibility of establishing there in Arizona. So all of these cases took place over 25 years ago. And since that time, I've had no further problems with the Illinois Board or the authorities of any kind. So I look forward to the opportunity to continue to live and practice in a responsible manner, if I'm allowed. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. we have reviewed your application and all the information pertaining to it. And so now, any board members, any questions? What's your pleasure, board?
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion to grant Tommy Gossett CC licensure pending all applicable fees are paid.
And is there a second? And Dr. Camacho got that one. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. The ayes have it. Dr. Gossett, you are licensed. Welcome to Arizona. We look forward to having you join us in our community.
Thank you very much.
Very, very good. We are now ready for tab 12. Review, discussion, and possible action for case number 2021-32, Dr. Robert Watson, which was previously before the board. Dr. Watson, are you present today?
Hello. Not yet. I'm getting ready to right now.
I think I'm hearing Dr. Watson now. Dr. Watson, are you here?
No, Dr. Gossett.
Yeah, okay. Dr. Gossett, okay.
Sorry, Bruce Crawford, I'm here on his behalf.
Very good. And so Dr. Watson will not be joining us today?
No.
Okay. And so, Ms. Enderby.
This matter is agendized as previously before the board. Just to give you a little history, the board voted unanimously to move this matter to a formal interview and to subpoena the respondent for the marketing materials that he used in his function. The board staff issued that subsequent subpoena, and Dr. Watson did provide those materials for you to review. They were included in your packet. And then the other direction the board gave board staff was to negotiate a consent agreement for this matter with the respondent. And board staff did attempt, and the our AG also attempted to come to an agreement. The respondent would like the consent agreement to be a non-disciplinary consent agreement. They are willing to do the continuing education hours that the board laid out and take and pass the Arizona jurisprudence exam. But where we are running into the issue is in regards to the record keeping audit. Previously, in our history, when we ask for record keeping audits, they are done under a disciplinary order so that the board has the ability to require the licensee to meet the requirements that are laid out by the auditor. If it's not a disciplinary action, we have no resource in that. A non-disciplinary order means we'd like you to go do this, and they can do that, but we have no enforcement mechanism to require them to make those changes that are laid out by the auditor. So I don't, in that environment, I don't understand how we can have a non-disciplinary order for record-keeping audits and then require the licensee to make those changes that are laid out by the auditor. So that's where we're having a bit of a disagreement. So in order to possibly consider this, board staff issued a subsequent subpoena for a patient list for Dr. Watson for, I believe, the most 6 month recent of patients, because we wanted to understand if these records were a one-off, and because they also were from 2020, had progress been made, and if there was an ability to go into that non-disciplinary audit, if we had some confidence that there were some improvements and changes had been made based on what the board laid out at the initial action. Mr. Crawford responded regarding the subpoena, stating that they had requested to not participate in the formal hearing and to move the matter not participate in the formal interview, but to have the matter moved to a formal hearing and subsequently to move the matter outside of your hearing to OWA. And that because it was now at OWA, the board staff did not have the authority to issue the subsequent subpoena. So the reason this matter is brought back here today was to lay all this out for you, to have this discussion with Mr. Crawford, and find out how the board would like to proceed in this matter, and if you needed legal advice, the AG's office is here to provide.
Okay, thank you. And before Mr. Crawford is allowed to speak, do you understand this? Okay.
I'm glad you guys understand. I think it's crazy.
But you crazy? You understand it's crazy?
I think.
Okay, all right. So, Mr. Crawford, you now have 5 minutes to make your arguments.
Okay, I'll just respond to the summary that was provided. So, the board voted to offer the option of a formal interview. The formal interview does not allow the licensee certain rights, for example, to cross-examine the complaining party, to call witnesses, to call an expert. So Dr. Watson feels strongly that some things that were said to the board by the complainant are not true, and he wants that right if that's where this has to go. So it's basically he's not willing to give up those rights, and his option is then to say, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do the formal interview at the board, and we opt the other route. In terms of the other thing the board voted at the meeting back in, I think, July, was a subpoena for the luncheon materials that came up, and we complied with that, and we provided everything. And I even said, if there's something you think we haven't given us, let us know, but we haven't heard anything. My recall is at that point, I got some communication from Mr. Dominic about potentially resolving this with a consent agreement. What we ultimately proposed was what you see at page 2 of the memorandum. Basically, Dr. Watson agreed to everything there. He also agreed to reimburse this lady the additional money she claimed she was owed, which he disagreed with, but we didn't want to fight over that. So he has given her that money. The other thing that I proposed and he is willing to do is to attend the PACE, P-A-C-E documentation program, which most of the boards utilize in Arizona. It's a very extensive course on documentation. It requires the doctor to submit records for their audit and evaluation, as well as billing records. So I offered that in addition to everything here. And the sticking point became this disciplinary issue. Dr. Watson hasn't had any discipline by the board. A disciplinary measure is very damaging to a doctor. It gets reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank. Insurance companies drop doctors without even a discussion when they see that there's any kind of discipline against them. So he was not willing to agree to that. And it's very harmful. He doesn't have any track record with the board that would warrant that, in our opinion. And he's agreed to do thousands of dollars of items as a compromise, including adding the PACE program on documentation as well, where there is evaluation, has he changed? And quite frankly, I proposed that and asked if that was acceptable. I didn't get any discussion. At that point, I got a subpoena for the case list, and I didn't even know what really that was for. Maybe there's a difference in memory there. I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but I got a case list for patients in 2023. And we just said, no, that's not been authorized by the board. You know, if the idea was we would want to see these records to see if the doctors changed, well, you would do that after he's completed all of this stuff. So, you know, this board does issue these kind of non-disciplinary orders all the time without audits. And so Dr. Watson has truly agreed to everything plus an additional item that gives UTI the confidence that somebody's actually looked at his records and made sure that he's changed. And if he hasn't, PACE is going to say that, and you're going to see it. So that's kind of where we're at on that. I've already talked about the formal interview. You know, that was simply because he felt like if this is going to go to that kind of process, he wants these additional rights that he would have to give up. So it's not personal. It's not a shot at the board. It's saying, you know, we want those rights. And it's especially because, honestly, he heard some of the things that the complaining party said about him and his practice, which he basically would say are completely untrue, and I can prove they're untrue. So that's one of the motivations for why he wants these rights. So I think he's offered this board an awful lot, and it's going to cost him thousands of dollars to comply. If he doesn't comply, then you can take action at that point. And I've even proposed a process by which you have confidence that somebody's looked at his records after doing the an extensive documentation course to make sure that he has changed. And I thought that addressed the issues.
Okay. Thank you. I have a question.
Sure.
The PACE program that you're talking about?
Yes.
In the chiropractic milieu, there is a PACE continuing education certification program. I'm not aware of any PACE documentation program at all that is called a PACE documentation program. Do you have the specific details on that?
I provided it to board staff. I even provided them a copy of a redacted letter that another client of mine got from PACE, which outlined what he was going to have to do in terms of including submitting records.
That's true.
Yeah.
I verified it. And it is an audit that he has to pass in order to get the approval for all of the coursework he does. Then there's audit. If he doesn't pass the audit, it's like he never took the courses. He's back to
state. Right, he won't pass the course.
Right.
I'd like to, you know, we are always looking for a good remedial action. We've used the TBI program with, so far been satisfied with it, but I'm always wanting to know what our alternatives are. So if we could get more information from staff, a reference at least so that we can research that.
I think page 76 in your exhibit.
76 and 77. PACE, in this instance, stands for Physician Assessment and Clinical Education.
Okay. And all right. We'll look at that.
I provided that, Dr. Bennett, so that you could see that. And Ryan did ask for it, and I gave it to him.
Yeah, that one got by me. That's not like.
But I'll tell you, the Arizona Medical Board, the Osteopathic Board, other boards use PACE all the time because it is so extensive.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm not at all disagreeing with you. In fact, I'm suggesting, as I just did, that we might want to consider that as another option that we have available to us. We were having this conversation as board members earlier about what are our options. And just before we begin any other questions, just by way of orientation, I kind of think we've gotten down a path where we're looking around and we don't really see the right solution. And my impression is that we kind of maybe need to back up the path. And the issue here is not just a matter, well, the issue has evolved as we've discovered more things in our inquiry. I spent a lot of time looking at these records, and I have very serious concerns, and I have concerns not just about documentation. And so we need to have access to more retrospective records rather than prospective stuff at this point to determine what we want to look at. look at in the future. And with that, there's some options, but with that, I want to ask the board members if there are any questions that they have, if they would ask Mr. Crawford. I'm not sure if he can speak on behalf of any technical questions. But. Ms. Powell?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so in looking at the document, the two issues of noncompliance, and I understand the arguments that were made relative to them, are with regard to objections to the subpoenas that were sent. And were viewed as sort of being viewed as onerous or heavy-handed. I don't believe, number one, we were looking for a patient list so that we can pick patient populations that we want to look at their records. That's a very standard protocol. And so we want to have the opportunity to look at more records. And based upon that, I think the best option is to remand the matter back to its initial action and then reissue the subpoena for a patient list that is an appropriate patient list and then move forward from there. Yes, Ms. Vanderby.
Would you also be rescinding the motion for formal interview?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, you know, I don't think it's anybody's intention to be over heavy-handed in discipline. If there's a non-disciplinary option available here, that's absolutely what we want to pursue. But we want to know that we have all the information we need. So I, without objection, I would entertain a motion to remand the matter back the initial action, reissue the subpoena for the patient list, and rescind the formal interview.
Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion to remand this back to the initial action and reissue the subpoena for 3 months of new patients. That's really what we want to see, the new patients, and that would include all of their records. That's going to answer.
We don't want to get all of their records. We just want the patient list.
Want the data.
Yeah, we don't need 3 months worth of patient records.
Okay, just and then from the new patient list, we would.
And then we would randomly select 10 patients.
Yeah. Okay.
Cash.
So that would be the most current patients and how things are being done now.
Yes.
So we could compare. Okay. So that would be my motion.
You just want to rescind the formal
interview? Yes, and rescind the formal interview.
You've heard the motion. I won't repeat it for the third time. Is there a second?
I'd like a second.
Dr. Lee has seconded it. Brief discussion. Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed by the same sign. There are none. Well, I have it. That's what we're going to do. I'm quite sure you understood that.
I understood it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next on the item, agenda is item I, tab 13, Executive Director's Report. Ms. Vanderveen, please present your report.
Do you know what I'm really excited about it? Because I feel like I don't have a room. Not that I'll make it longer than it needs to be, but I don't have to, rush through.
Bye.
Some bladders might argue otherwise.
Right.
Did anybody need a 5?
I promise I won't be long.
Okay. All right.
No, I just meant that, the last one, I kind of was like,
yeah, we had a lot to cover last time. Oh, good. You're screen sharing. That's good.
I am. All right. This is my executive report for the December. So to start with the usual number of cases over 180 days old, we just really keep up rate about 46, 43. So we do kind of, we've made significant progress. It swings back and forth.
We had a lot of initial complaints coming on board as well, right? more than we have had in the past.
And really, when we talk about these, like, these are really, in most cases, cases that have not come before you for initial action. But it also does include some of these older historic cases that just take us longer to get through. As you can see, when they get more complex or we go through more levels of the process, obviously they take longer to adjudicate. So this is open. This is kind of what you all do at each meeting. So on average, you average about 15 items per agenda. So the yellow is the total number of complaints that were on the agenda, and then broken out by our kind of how we prioritize them, red cases being those high priority cases that we really try to put to the front of the line over those medium, low priority cases. So trying to find that balance between the priority cases and just the other ones that are kind of older that need to come along. So we've been pretty consistent, and it's about 50-50. Again, looking at your agenda, the yellow are the cases that you've closed. So when I say close, like, you made some sort of action that closed the matter. Either you issued a consent agreement or you issued a non-disciplinary order. So the matter is closed at that meeting, and we didn't have to move it forward. So about 50% of the time, you address things at initial action. And then the greens are the cases that you've continued. Either you've made a motion to continue it or it's had to continue into another setting. So again, like the last two meetings, we didn't have any items continued. We just moved them on. I felt like there has been a lot of discussion, and maybe I feel it more than anyone because I'm answering some of these inquiries from outside entities about, well, how long does it take the board to typically close the complaint? Is this currently how you address these? And I think there's also some pending legislation that may come out again in this legislative session about requiring boards to have matters fully adjudicated or adjudicated within 180 days. So I went and did kind of a historical perspective. I pulled all of our cases by days going back to 2016. The blue is the number of days it takes to get to initial action. The red is to close. And as you can see, 2020, there's a huge spike. So you can correlate that to a lot of what the board kind of went through in 2020. Plus, I think when you add COVID and the pandemic, those drove those case days up significantly. And then the two kind of outliers are 18 and 19. And as some of you board members who've been with us through that, you recognize that we were going back kind of addressing some of the cases from 2018 that hadn't been closed. And so that has driven those numbers up. But as you see, if we start to move forward, we're starting to come back into line with where we were historically in 2017 and 2016. Finance and budget. The first four columns are just to give you a perspective at the end of the year when we close the year. So the yellow is the appropriation. And just to kind of clarify, we don't exactly work like a business. Just because I have the money sitting in the bank account, I don't have access to it. I have to comply with the legislative appropriation that is given to the board. So every year I write a budget on behalf of the board, either to maintain funding as is or request additional funding for additional staff, equipment, computers, whatever. But I have to operate within whatever there's appropriated to me, regardless of what's in my revolving fund. But additionally, when you look at the fund, the appropriation is the yellow. Whatever's in the revolving fund is basically the fund for next year. So really, the only additional funding that I have would be from the 542 and above, because that's the appropriation for the next year, because we get appropriated the money annually. So basically, what we have in our revolving fund is like an additional $73,000 over next year's appropriation.
And can you use that next year?
It will depend on what they appropriate. So the governor's budget hasn't passed. We are part of the governor's executive budget. So when they present that to the legislature, they will, whatever items we put forward, I put forward two different staff members for our team in our budget. They may choose to put forward one in our budget request, or they may choose to request funding for both. But I have to justify that we'll have the revenue and all of that to support additional staff or additional equipment purchases or whatever we're trying to do. So we do always have to kind of try to be thinking a year out. So when they make that request, when the budget passes in May, that will determine what our appropriation is for next year. So this just shows you the like where we are in the appropriation cycle, so how much they've paid out in the appropriation versus the revenue. And again, because we don't have rolling revenue, right, we're in renewal cycle, so you see that start to tick up where we haven't had a whole lot of revenue coming in, obviously, because 95% of our revenue comes in through the renewal applications. This is just, this includes previous year license issues versus where we're at for license issues now. We've received 30 applications and we've issued 23 licenses. Renewal applications, I know everyone's talking about this. So we have received about 600, over 600, because I'm not sure how many have processed today. We've been talking to us, or well, we've been meeting. The red ones are the ones that are incomplete. So they're basically now we're down to there's only two reasons your license application is incomplete. You haven't paid the required extension fee for 2025, or when you uploaded your CEs, we either can't read the CE certificate or you didn't upload the appropriate number. So you said you had 12 hours, you only gave us 8 hours of certificate. So those applications are incomplete. So basically, we've touched all 600 applications.
What about people who have tried to apply but have not been able to navigate?
I will get to that. But what I really, really, really want to state here is because of the changes that we have made, and I understand we're dealing with an onboarding issue, and that's a subsequent issue, but this is what the future looks like. Most applications are literally being approved the same day they were submitted. So we've never been in this circumstance. You know that usually I'm talking to you in December, and I'm saying, well, we're still processing back on November 15th. We are literally, she is literally right now processing everything that was submitted today. So that's how much faster in terms of once we get everybody on board, this process actually works. So, and subsequent to that, it's real time. So as soon as she approves it in the system, if you go to your, if you look yourself up on the your profile, your date has changed and your license has been approved. And you can monitor this entire process from inside your portal.
Cool.
So all the messaging happens inside your portal. So if we're missing something, we're messaging you directly in that portal and you're able to upload and provide those certificates back.
How hard is it to get in the portal?
Well, that's, we'll talk about that. continuing education applications, this is just kind of that historical perspective. So far to date, we received 125 continuing education applications. We've processed 100. We have 25 that are pending, and so most of them are, I want to say November, December, that she's working on right now. All right, CINTIA update. The largest challenges, again, as we talked last month, is the correct portal email address. And we have, I would say, from where we were in October to where we are now, staff has learned a lot about the portal and how we're navigating the back end to help doctors and to get doctors into unlocked accounts and what triggers things. So I think that has been a vast improvement in just the internal processing. With that being said, one of the challenge is that, right, everybody changes email addresses, it appears. And so what was on the renewal application and what the board has on file is not the email address you used. Or perhaps staff completed that application for you, so you're using your clinic email address, right? So if you have an info clinic email address or a general info clinic, that's been listed as your primary email account, and that's what we set your portal access key to. So then you, the doctor, go to log in, and you're, like, using your email address. We don't have that linked to your profile. So one of the best things to do when you have those, if you're sending that portal access, if you're hitting that activate now button and you're not getting that email after, like, two attempts, if you just email the renewals inbox with your correct email address, and then it comes, the other thing, it needs to come from the doctor's email account, because we have an obligation that we're not changing someone's information when we're dealing with somebody we don't know. So when it's coming from, again, that info clinic, please reset the password or reset the email to this. I don't have confirmation that that's actually the doctor requesting that change. And so we've really kind of tried to say, can you just please email us from your primary address, and we'll reset your portal access credentials and get you into your account. So that's one of the biggest things. It is a challenge, and it really delays us when you call us with those requests, because it's really hard to be like, okay, so your email what? And they're like spelling it out, and you're trying to spell it back, and it's got numbers and underscores. If you can just email us, it's a lot faster process. We are currently waiting for the developer to finalize the wallet card and the receipt. So currently, your license is being approved, but you can't print that receipt yet. So there's that. That's causing a little bit of delay, and I understand reasonable frustration, because that's been something that's been instantaneous. But here's the change that comes with that. As I stated earlier, most credentialing companies, what they're using is our public portal, because that's real time and that's updated consistently. They recognize that your piece of paper could be 30 days old, and in that 30 days we could have issued and published discipline, and so they're relying on that public portal as the actual public verification. So as I stated earlier, when you renew your license, that is public, it's real time, and as soon as we issue that, it's all updated. You're not having to wait for us to weekly run a database query update and make those changes. It's happening real time as soon as we do it. For the extensions, just to ensure that we weren't making like manual human errors, we've made the decision that we'll renew everybody's license and their expiration date will show 2024. In January, once we've finished processing everyone's applications and we have all the renewals in and all the extension fees paid, we'll run a bulk update with Cynthia, and everyone's renewal date will automatically, if you put in a renewal, will automatically update to 2025. And we've provided this information in the email, the approval email you received. It says that we understand that your current expiration date is listed as 2024. And if your date is after, if your birth date is after February, it will automatically update to 2025. So everybody whose birthdays are in January, we are doing those manually so that you're not having to renew again in January. We are experiencing a high volume of phone calls, but I really want to be on record that staff is answering every one of these phone calls, and that our process and procedures are such that we have, as I said in the last meeting, we have a phone tree system. So if Ryan's on the phone and you call for investigations and Ryan's on that phone, it automatically rings to Larry's phone. And if Larry's on the phone, it rings to me. And the same is true for licensing. If you call Connie and Connie doesn't answer, it rings to Laura. If Laura doesn't answer, it rings to me. All of the phones, I'm the last into that, and I'm not getting the phone calls, which tells me that staff is answering their phone. With that being said, if you do call and all of us are on the phone and you don't leave a voicemail, our staff standard process is we have caller ID, we call you back and say, hi, you just called, this is the board, how can we help you? 90% of the time, most people will say, oh, Larry already helped me. And so I can tell you, staff, we had a meeting, we had a staff meeting, we meet every day at 9 o'clock for 15 to 30 minutes to just set the day, figure out where everything's at. We have one individual call the office. In a matter of 25 minutes, she called every line, and she had placed 30 phone calls in that 15 minutes. Like, that is incredibly overwhelming to the system, because every one of the staff called her back. And she didn't leave a single voicemail. And so Laura called her, Ryan called her, Larry called her, Connie called her. I mean, you want to complain about the system not working, like, we're responding and we're saying, if you can't reach us by phone, please send us an email. And so that, I would say the system overwhelm is far more that than in terms of actual call volume. I understand there's an urgency. I understand you want to get into the portal. We're doing everything to make that feasible, but that churn does not help the situation.
Question on call volume. I'm hearing a lot that the voicemail box is full.
I was going to get to that.
Okay, thank you.
The other item we see is, I kind of stated earlier, is missing the extension payment. Connie is basically, she's verifying, she has a list, right? We're filtering by the ones that are marked incomplete, and she's reviewing those incompletes every day, and as soon as you make that extension fee payment, she's approving those. And so that is a daily process that we are going back in and double-checking those ones that are missing their extension or CEs. Oh, yeah, somebody emailed and called Dr. Guarino, and I responded to their email 15 minutes after they had sent it, and they had already called Dr. Guarino's office.
Really?
Before I had time to respond. But 15 minutes.
Yeah.
The other, and just to talk about the extension payment, because I know there's been some grumblings that it's not all inside Cynthia, because of the timing of when the legislation came out and where we were in flight with Cynthia about, because we were about ready to launch when the governor's budget passed, and since we weren't sure it was going to pass, like we were not in a place to make changes to the programming decisions as in terms of how Cynthia worked and building that in. So this was really kind of our only recourse. So just in terms of, we were in the middle of UAT testing kind of when we were, and so if there just wasn't enough time to add that into our production to have that inside of Cynthia. So there was just, it was too much coding and all of that. So we weren't able to do that. That's why we ended up doing it outside. So if your license is, if this is one, these are some of the things I'm working with to get fixed. Inactive, if your license is currently inactive, skipping the payment step. So we are just issuing invoices inside of Cynthia, and just before we approve it, they're required to pay. This one has been a huge challenge, is the CA applications was a new custom application that they built just for us. And because of that, there have been a lot of challenges with the code, and it's like breaking and just things just not working quite right. And some of it is just the scope and size of what this application is supposed to do and all the places it has to link into the system. Because it's pulling the employment data and it's linking it back to the doctor, and then it's trying to link it over to the business entities as we start to bring down. It's just, it's so much that it's just kind of cumbersome at the moment. So when a CA actually finishes the entire application and they hit submit, it's not submitting. So they don't get the date where it says it's been submitted to the board. And when you look at it on our end from the workbench, we only see that they're in there and new. It doesn't change the status of submitted where it comes into our submitted queue for processing. So There's been some delays in those applications, but everything that has been completed and submitted, there were 18, and we were finalizing those yesterday. The other challenge that kind of comes in with that that's made it a little difficult for us to quickly identify ones that need to be approved is because the CA starts with the registration, so they just are required to register, create that profile first, and then they have a year from the date they created their profile to upload the CE application. And so because of that, there are some in there that are shown and the queue is new that we're like, are they done? Like, it's really hard for us to just flag those quick things and be like, oh, okay, that was submitted and we should have processed it. We don't know if it's not submitted to us because they need to finish their coursework. They have a year to do that. In the last step, when you pay for your renewal, because you have to go out of Cynthia and basically into the state payment portal to make your renewal payment, there's a last page that once you've entered all your information, your credit card, and it's processed your credit card, that screen pops up again, and it says, your payment is now complete. Please hit continue. So basically, when you hit continue, it takes you back out of the board payment portal or the state portal and puts you back in the Cynthia. Well, if you don't hit continue, it never takes you back in the Cynthia and so your application doesn't get submitted. So we have created a workaround for that. We are checking those. So they are showing up in our queues as new with an invoice. We know you pay, we're processing it, even though it's not been submitted to us. I talked about the CA application submitting in the system. It is live. We have, when I checked last night, there were 52 pending reviews, meaning Connie needs to review them. There's been 401 processed, which means we've approved, and then there are 235 that are incomplete.
If there are any mistakes made, like that are the results of a software problem or anything that's on our side problem, can we catch that? And does it then not have consequence to the doctor or the CA? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I think staff is very, very aware that there are challenges, and in terms of doing everything in our power to help somebody walk through and not have it be an issue. When you get staff on the phone, we are finding, like, for the CAs, we had a problem for a while where you were able to look the doctor up and link to the doctor. Staff was going through and on the back end, manually entering those and saving those. And we weren't doing anything in terms of, like, oh, well, you didn't do it in 7 days. Like, we're not doing any sort of disciplinary action. And then the board will need to decide where you are in January in terms of some of those late renewals as we start to deal with those.
Okay. So one last question. The phone calls, exorbitant number of phone calls that you get every day, are you able to prioritize callbacks, or do you just do them as they come in, you know, in rotation?
So
it doesn't matter what it's about.
So I really appreciate the question. So there are some limitations. We don't own our own phone system. That's all managed by the state. So I have no say in how it works, how it functions. I don't get reports, anything like that. So basically, it is like your standard office phone number. We don't have a queue. We don't have anything like that. Dr. Bennett's point about the voicemail boxes, we are on a state system, and the voicemail boxes are limited to 20 voicemails. So you can imagine overnight, they fill up quickly. And as staff is very diligent, most staff are in before 8 o'clock and are trying to get those voicemails cleaned out before 8 so that they're available. But that has been one of the challenges, and it's just a software limitation that I don't control.
Right.
And so the state has also been going through a very large contract change with the provider. They're transferring away from Lumis to Nexus, I believe. And so then, we have tickets that are 4 years, 4 months old at this point in terms of things that we've tried to do. And, so every time we want to redo the phone tree, we have to put a ticket in, and we have to wait for them. And I'm not joking. Every time they have gotten one of our tickets, they've broken something else. So a great example of this is we added a fifth option in the menu for renewals. Well, they didn't connect it to our phone line. They connected it for behavioral health.
I thought they connected it right with that behavioral health phone for them, for renewals for behavioral health were being sent to us.
So they were being sent to us. They're a licensing board of 15,000.
Nice.
So we already were getting a lot of phone calls, and then we were getting their phone calls. So that completely also overwhelmed the system. And that was like 3 days before they got that fixed.
Wonderful.
So, I mean, it's just, that's what I'm saying. Like, when we go to get something fixed, like, it's not like a, oh, yeah, we'll do that for you tomorrow.
Right.
And so, and usually every time we, I'm like, ooh, do we really want to touch that? Because, like, where are we going to break? So we have plans that starting in January, I think we're going to start to transition over. Zoom now has a phone system that is state approved to transition to over to Zoom, because then we would own all of that and could manage all of that.
When you do the budget for next year, can you add an extra person that just answers the phones?
Well, I mean, that is a hard position to maintain, because And I don't know, and I think we have to think about what does this look like in the future? Like, this isn't how renewals are going to be in the future. We're going to be renewing 200 a month starting in 2025.
You're still going to have lots of phone calls about other things.
I recognize that, and I can tell you from being on the other side when it's not this season.
Yeah.
No.
Then you could use that.
Well, so my funding request was for another licensing person to help with licensing and continuing education, and then to hire basically what we would have under licensing as a renewal staff person that would do nothing but the renewal application. Here's a look at, we do answer emails. As you can see, October we had the most. November and December, we've had 104. This also doesn't include the 200 messages that we've sent through the portal regarding. I cannot state that the one thing that we do hear back in terms of feedback is doctors that use the how-to guide have found the renewal process much easier and less difficult. So we are getting ready, and we've scheduled another email communication to go out. This is kind of, it's just to everybody who hasn't renewed yet. It's just like, are you ready to renew? Make sure, here's the handy guide. Like, take a few minutes, and here's the link to the extension. So that will be going out, I'm hoping, this week or Monday. I wanted to take a few minutes to talk about our next board meeting, since we will be doing a planning and strategy session. I think at the most we might have two to four initial actions, and maybe mostly consent items.
Okay.
And that the proposed discussion was to talk about the rulemaking process and what that entails. Proposed board rules changes, what you all would like to see change.
Oh, we're going to change statutes, huh?
What statutes and how we might go
statute.
About that.
It's statute. Sorry, I just, you know.
We also are required annually to review our fees and establish fees, so we would be establishing fees for FY25. You requested a business entity communication plan and strategy. So we will have that. And then the board does have authority to delegate authority to the executive director. We've been kind of directed that the best practice is to review that every 2 years. So we have not reviewed that since I've been executive director, so I think it would be appropriate to do so in January. And I'm open to, are there any other items that you would like to make sure I include on this agenda? I also, as Ryan promptly pointed out, we would be starting this board meeting at 10 instead of 9 because we are going to have a meeting with the chair at 9 a.m. with the joint.
And also, I thought
we would order lunch to that day, and if you guys would be amenable, I was thinking like we can just do something simple like salad and go.
Fine with me.
Prime rib. No, I'm just kidding. No, salad's perfect.
Grant, salad.
We are, Grant is an open one. We found that out. Yeah, can we get Durant to open it once? No, just kidding. So with regard to the proposed board rule changes, I would just say that please give attention before the meeting to rule changes. We're going to have to prioritize these because I've had suggestions from practitioners in the field. I have my list. Everybody has their list. There's the list. Mm-hmm. And they are going to have to be prioritized. Mm-hmm. And part of that, we'll talk about it with the rulemaking process, is the impact from the executive orders and what the workarounds are and so on and so forth. That's some work.
With that,
completes
my report to question.
Hearing none, move to the next tab item, which is Mr. Dominic's report.
How do I turn
it? So you're provided two documents. One is professionals on suspended status, which is granted one, and professionals on probation. This was 13, but you just terminated one probation, so it'll be down to 12 after this meeting. Any questions?
Is that it?
That's it.
That's awesome. Okay, so next on the agenda is item J, call to the public. Can you unscreen share to see if we have anybody attending? You have up to 2 minutes to make a statement on the record. This is not meant to be a two-way dialogue, as the board cannot respond to your statements. If you do wish to make a statement, please raise your hand or Zoom. You will hear public comments from anyone who wants to make a statement in person, and then we will take public comments from Zoom. Is there anyone present in person who wishes to make a statement?
No,
okay, getting a denial from the only person in the room. Is anyone on Zoom who would wish to make a statement?
Yes, excuse me. Yes, hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, please proceed. You have 2 minutes.
Thank you, sir. I spoke on a call to the public comment on the last board meeting. I believe it was October 25th. My complaints are in regards to sexual misconduct. This complaint was made almost 18 months ago, which I stated previously. To date, has not been asked any questions regarding her sexual misconduct by the board. Has multiple patients who have made complaints of the same. I am please asking again why the board has not brought forth and asked her any questions or put it on the agenda. 18 months is far too long to have waited to address high priority issues. These are serious accusations and the public is in danger. I am again requesting that you please address these complaints in a timely manner. And I thank you all again for allowing me to speak.
Thank you. Are there any other individuals who would wish to raise your hand and speak on our call to the public? Are there any other attendees via Zoom who would like to speak in the call to the public? Hearing none, the all of the public section of the agenda is finished, and the time is 12:59, and this meeting is adjourned.